Welcome to the November 15th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Remember, if you have electronic devices, cell phones, etc., please silence them for our meeting. That includes legislators. And if there should be an emergency, the emergency exits are to my right at the back of the room, to my left at the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. The first thing we're going to do tonight is a public hearing. And the public hearing, I'll read the announcement. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. In the legislature chambers concerning proposed local law number E of 2016, amending the Tompkins County Charter. And this is the revised charter that has been worked on by the Charter Review Committee and this legislature over the past couple of years. So is there anyone tonight who would like to speak about the charter? If so, please come to the microphone. I have one blue card, actually. Blue cards aren't necessary to speak on the public hearings, but Sheila McInerney is more than welcome.
Thank you. So, dear legislators, my name is Sheila McInerney, and I'm the chair of the Community Mental Health Services Board. Tonight, I would like to read a statement on behalf of the board regarding the proposed charter language revisions to Section C-16, specifically changing the wording upon the recommendation of the Community Mental Health Services Board to following consultation with the Community Mental Health Services Board. However, I would like to preface my statement by stating that this is not about Commissioner Frank Krupa or his leadership. On the contrary, we are very satisfied with both Frank's leadership and that of Sharon McDougall. Both have been very collaborative, responsive, and transparent with us, and we appreciate the stability that they have provided. And now for the statement. This is to the Tompkins County Legislature from the Tompkins County Community Mental Health Services Board, again, regarding the revisions to Section C-16, the Department of Mental Health Services Commissioner Appointment Qualifications. We are asking you to restore the authority and duty of our board to recommend the Commissioner of Mental Health Services. We do this for two reasons. First, without this authority, it is possible that a commissioner could be hired who did not have the support and trust of the board. Given how closely we work with the commissioner, this would make meeting our many responsibilities extremely challenging. Our current commissioner, Frank Krupa, has stated that he would not want to be in the position of having to work with a board that did not recommend him. Second, due to state laws, the Board of Health does have the authority and duty to recommend the commissioner, and this cannot be changed by the charter. Therefore, you have put us exactly in the position that we feared with a shared commissioner. That is, mental health becomes the poor sister of health. We already have the disadvantage of a much smaller budget and the stigma that exists around mental health. Now imagine the situation of a commissioner who is charged to work equally closely with these two boards. One of them has the authority to approve his or her position, and the other does not. Given human nature, it would be almost impossible to give equal weight to the wishes and directives of both boards. One of the many reasons that we did recommend that Frank Krupa stay on as the commissioner of both health and mental health was the hope that this could lead to more and better coordination between our areas of expertise and service. This decision by the Charter Committee will jeopardize these goals. Thank you.
Thank you. And sorry for the mispronunciation of your last name. Is there anyone else who would like to speak at the public hearing now on our proposed charter revisions? Well, I'm a little surprised that we haven't had more people here to speak about it. We've been advertising it for quite a while. But we're pleased. Maybe folks are on some of the other areas are feel that it's the way it ought to be. But we are glad to take comments in other ways before we actually act on this. So at this point, I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to move to the regular meeting. Wondered if folks would please stand to recite the Pledge of Allegiance with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'll use Hinani.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
I'm here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
Everyone's here. Glad to see everyone. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm pleased tonight to have a proclamation, and I would call Barbara Ekstrom, who is, heads up our solid waste department, if she would come up. Can they all come? We'd be pleased to have all of them. I'm going to read the proclamation. Whereas each year Americans generate more than 217 million tons of municipal solid waste, more than 4.5 pounds per person per day, while the nation has reached an overall recycling rate of more than 34%, and Tompkins County has reached 60%, much more can be done, especially in closing the loop and purchasing products made with recycled content. Whereas to focus the nation's attention on the importance of recycling and closing that loop, businesses, industries, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and individuals have joined together to celebrate America Recycles Day and are encouraging their employers, staff, customers, membership, and all residents to pledge to learn more about recycling options in their community and commit to do more. And whereas participating in America Recycles Day is one way residents can help raise awareness about the need to reduce waste by reusing, recycling, and buying recycled products. And whereas the theme of America Recycles Day 2016 is, quote, be recycled, unquote. And whereas the Tompkins County Solid Waste Management Division works to spread the word about the excellent programs that have been established, the growth of markets for recyclable materials, and the importance of buying recycled products. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the County Legislature, do proclaim Tuesday, November 15th, 2016, as America Recycles Day in Tompkins County, and has signed this proclamation. Say your name, Jeff, so people...
My name is Jeff Dunn. I'm the Communications and Administrative Coordinator for the Solid Waste Division. And we had staff out in several locations yesterday and today to help promote our programs, particularly our food scraps recycling initiative, the wearable clothing, unwanted textiles donations, as well as just the general... knowledge of our programs and being on hand to answer any questions that people may have had. It wouldn't be possible without this gentleman here to my left, to your right, Jeremy Betterly. He is our new, will be our new project assistant, joining the division effective this coming Monday. But he's no stranger to us. He's been a contractor for the last couple of years. doing much of our outreach. He's been co-coordinating our CRT, compost, recycling, and trash collection initiatives that we have at various festivals and public events, and he's also been a drop spot attendant in the drop spot program with food scraps recycling. So we're very pleased to have him, and I just wanted to take a moment to introduce him to you this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out tonight.
Mike, could I add to the proclamation?
Go ahead, Rich.
I just wanted to say I had a chance to go down to the center and get a tour and particularly focus on the safety programs that are in place down there. And not only does our center process far better than the national average, but the safety record is really commendable. When you think about all the risks that are involved that are in processing all that, members of the public are in there. There's commercial traffic with big trucks. There's private vehicles. There's fire hazard. There's electrical. There's mechanical risks. And that safety record is outstanding. And it's, I believe, a reflection of the very good job being done down there.
Thanks, Rich. Announcements of executive sessions, reordering of business, and special orders of the day. We will have an executive session. Shouldn't be too long tonight. It will be with respect to a personnel matter involving a particular person, and we probably will not take action after that. Jonathan, Joe, we don't have any other matters, do we?
No.
Let's proceed to privilege of the floor, and we'll have privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that any member of the public has to come and speak to this legislature on any topic for up to 3 minutes. We ask if you'd like to speak to please sign one of the blue cards in the back of the room and hand it up and have it passed forward. By signing the blue card, you're agreeing to our rules, which is that you agree to a 3-minute time limit, you agree not to raise your voice, you agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that you are agreeing that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. We have a clock on to my left on the wall over there. We'll count down the 3 minutes. At the end of the 3 minutes, there is an audible ring, and we're asking if you're still speaking then to please conclude. I have one blue card from Sherry Cortez. Sherry?
Hi, I'm Sherry Cortez, Ithaca, downtown. I'm here to speak a bit about the $60,000 study for the new jail expansion. I think that $60,000, I believe taxpayer dollars could be used better elsewhere. I really don't think we need a new jail expansion. And the bottom line is that the board out costs have only been $250,000 like 1 year because I went back and did the research. And it, you know, I can give you all the figures when I come to, or I'll be at the meeting Thursday, but they use that justification that we pay $250,000 a year on board out cost every year, and we don't. And the debt service on a $19 to $20 million bond issue is going to be, you know, a lot more. I just say a lot more money than what board out cost, and that's been proven through counties that have expanded their jail. I had those figures, but I'll just hold off on that. The community, I would like to know if they're going to be involved at all in this, because I read the presentation from the guys you picked, which were from Rochester, New York, and then the California. Because, see, I told you last time, all over the country they're trying to do this. They're going to shut the state prisons and push the population down into the local jails. And I know that this jail we're looking at may have, like, special treatment facilities for mental health and rehab and all this put in one. But to me, you could take that 19 to 20 and put it into our city, into our housing problem in the city and take that money and make halfway houses and treatment centers and not in a jail facility that's going to be 24-hour surveillance. These are people with drug problems, mental issues. New Orleans, they just built a huge jail. New Orleans, there's cities all over. Baltimore did it. They're building these huge jail facilities now. And I'm just not comfortable with that. And I know you guys will probably do the study, but I'd ask that you didn't and look at other ways to spend this money because it is a large amount. We need to invest in programs also so that maybe we could train some of these guys that are the repeat. You know, maybe they could use construction skills. We could partner with or plumbing, electricity, installing solar panels. These are things, skills that everybody needs, really, for what's to face us. I mean, we really need to get prepared. And again, I keep saying we're all human beings, and we all need to prepare for what's ahead. And it's going to be interesting. So thank you for listening to me, and I appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you. It's the only blue card I have. I haven't had any other ones passed up. Anyone else want to speak on privilege of the floor? Okay. Let's go on to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see at least two out there, Deborah Cipolla-Dennis and Duxon Ewan. And who wants to go first? Deborah Cipolla-Dennis is a town board member from the town of Dryden.
Hi there. Just to give you a quick update on what's going on in Dryden, we did pass our budget on November the 10th. And we're also trying to mitigate the loss of our recreation director while we're trying to define a new job description and do that search. We have transitioned one of our part-time recreation assistants to a full-time recreation coordinator to assist with that because it was just too much work for two part-time people. And we're very excited that Dan Lamb and Kathy Servos will be continuing on the Dryden Town Board in 2017. They were successful in the election. The town board approved a special use permit at the October meeting for a new self-storage business that will be on Enterprise Road that is just on the edge of the village of Dryden, kind of where the village and the town meet. Apparently there is a great need for self-storage in Dryden because we have another place that's going up that we approved earlier in the year that is now under construction on Route 13. We'll also be considering a modification to our zoning law that will allow for conservation subdivisions in the Varna zoning districts. This will allow for projects like the Tiny Timbers project that is currently being looked at and hopefully will be approved soon to go forward without having to get a variance. Currently, they have to get a variance for the lot sizes. And what we're looking at is actually creating cluster zones, areas where cluster development can occur in a better way for conservation. That's going to require a change to our comprehensive plan as well, I believe. Dryden's fire departments received their ISO ratings of 4 for residential and 3 for commercial. This is important because it can lower homeowners and businesses' fire insurance significantly. So we're going to be putting a notice out in the tax bills informing people of that so they can call their insurance companies and request that to be reevaluated, and they should get a refund. Our rail trail task force has also been continuing to do great work. The biggest hurdle they have right now is negotiating an easement with the DEC game farm. They're working through all the channels at DEC and trying to move that forward. That's the biggest stumbling block we have at the moment. And we realized that when we went to evaluate our solar law that it's going to require a change to our comprehensive plan. So instead of looking at that and at the December meeting, we have to have a public hearing for the comprehensive plan changes. And so we'll be considering that in January. Any questions?
Deborah, I had a question.
Yes.
I think yesterday that there's a substantial cut in the town's support for the Southworth Library. I think over 25% decrease. Is that correct?
Yes. Unfortunately, we had to make some pretty serious cuts to our budget in order to keep the amount of fund balance that we're using down and also not increase taxes too much. We did have a pretty significant tax rate increase as well in our budget. So several of our programs that we really enjoy doing had to be cut, such as our community grant program that we have. We cut that. We will continue to support the Junior Firefighters Association or training that they do every year. But really, other than that, a lot of our community events got cut. And unfortunately, the library, we had a reduction, I believe, from $14,000 to $10,000 that we're supporting for the library. It's tough choices we had to make.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thanks.
Duxon. Councilman from the city of Ithaca, our only city.
Yes. We, too, passed our budget, 1.98% levy increase, 6.6% tax rate decrease, 9% assessment or taxable value growth. So, I mean, there's some natural growth there, but there's a lot of new construction, too. And so we believe that's contributing to our ability to stay below the cap and lower the rate. Council voted 8-2 to reject McGuire's car dealership proposal at the Carpenter Business Park. They do own the land, and they have the option to come back with a significantly revised plan, and they may do that. They expressed interest in doing that, and so we may see another application from them. The ordinance that gave council power to review every project that goes through the waterfront expires in less than a year, and so we have that. We have the city staff has that much time to put new zoning in place, which will kind of give you this process and give them more guidance on what is allowed to be built there. We got a dredging update. I know a lot of people are in the city are interested in the condition of our waterways. So it's going to take about 3 months to study to get an estimate on the cost of dredging Cascadilla Creek. We have $2 million to work with. And so this estimate will let us know how far that money will go. Through a generous donation from the Park Foundation, the Wood Street Skate Park will be lit now, which is exciting. It draws a lot of people from outside Ithaca, and I think even the county. It's a very popular location, and the residents of Titus Towers wanted lighting there, both for safety, but also they love seeing people use it, and they're excited about it being able to be used during the fall and winter months. We got a presentation from the Tompkins County Tourism Program, so that was enlightening. We in the city are happy that 78% of those hotel fees are spent in the city, and they went over a lot of the things that they do and support, and so we're thankful for that. And I know you are considering, thanks to Rich for updating my ward mate Seth and I on, you know, the thinking of buying up the Tompkins Financial Building and potentially housing the historic Tompkins County History Center there. So there is a little concern from some of our colleagues about taking it off the tax rolls. But for our part, Seth and I are excited about the traffic it'll bring to the commons, bring greater exposure to the nonprofits that it'll house, such as the History Center, which is in the kind of a non-ideal place right now. So speaking for myself, and I'm with a fair amount of confidence from my ward mate, we are supportive of that plan. So thanks for considering it. I'll see you next month.
Thanks. Questions? Will Burbank.
Hi, Doug. Thank you once again for your really exhaustive reports. I was a little unclear, though, when you're talking about the McGuire proposal. Can you say a little more about the concerns that were raised and caused your colleagues to reject? And secondly, you said something to the effect that that only 1 year remains in the ability of council to influence this. Did I hear you correctly?
That's right. So the temporary mandatory plan unit development that we put on the waterfront area lasts for 18 months and was passed in February, I believe. And so 18 months from February, so was that August of next year, is when the city has until to put in proper zoning, like actual permanent zoning. Until then, any developer in that area will still have to go through council to get approval for any project. So some of the concerns that council had. It basically came down to, and the TM PUD requires that we look to the comprehensive plan for guidance as to what is appropriate for the city. And we felt that acres of asphalt, of parking, one-story car storage, basically, was inappropriate, that our priorities are on mixed use, particularly housing. I guess that was the crux of it. I mean, there are a bunch of issues of other, you know, concerns about traffic and runoff and things like that. But most of us were kind of bottom line, felt that a car dealership wasn't appropriate and that there is a better use for it.
Thank you.
More questions. I see Mike Sigler, then Jim Dennis.
I was just wondering, aren't there high power lines through that property? And I guess what is the city thinking about for that property? I mean, it doesn't seem like housing would fit there. I don't know.
Well, so 40% of it does have NYSEG rights of way over it. It's the feeling of most of us that the remaining 60% or 52%, I think it is actually, is usable. And so we're hopeful that someone can come along and make use of it. McGuire is not giving up. And so they talked about briefly divesting a portion of the land, perhaps to someone who is willing to build a mixed-use facility. So I take it from their continued interest that there is some flexibility on that property.
Jim?
Thanks for coming over. My question is, what's your best information that you can relay to us from boards and committees at the city level on where our library project is at this date?
I think you were all included on an email from Nancy Metzger that has way more detail than I know off the top of my head. And so I may not be the best person, though. But my understanding is that at the last meeting of the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Commission committee, they continued to express a bunch of concerns and reservations. And I think a decision was tabled. And then the next move may be on the developer to amend it to their concerns or not.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Sure.
Privilege of the floor for legislators. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention the passing of Don Culligan, who was a 35-year member of the Tompkins County Legislature, and that's an enormous amount of time to go to meetings. While he was doing that also, he was a teacher coach at Ithaca High School for many years, coached the IHS basketball team and did a fine job doing that and many other things. He was also the first vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature when it became a legislature. When they were a board of reps, I don't think they had vice chairs. Don used to get nominated all the time to be the chair of the legislature, but of course the numbers were against him, so he would never make it to be the chair of the leg. But he did end up being the vice chair, and which is an interesting thing. I knew him many years. I played in a golf league, a teacher golf league with him, and my only politics story is one that I experienced in 1979. Everybody and their brother in Ithaca, the city of Ithaca, ran for mayor. And I actually had my name in, went through a process, was almost the nominee of the Democratic Party, but someone above me decided that I was not a good choice, and it turned into a free-for-all with a whole bunch of people running for mayor. Don was one of them. Who else? A woman from East Hill, and her name is slipping my mind. And Ray Bordone, he ended up as the mayor. And I made a stupid political mistake and supported Don Culligan in one of the caucuses. And it cost me, as a member of the city council, I was, what can you say, abandoned for a while as a member of the city council. And it was a learning experience for me, and I did learn from it. But he was an interesting, hardworking guy, has a great family, and for a long time, Ithaca people, they would know him probably much better than me, but I felt it appropriate that, you know, anyone who serves in this group for 35 years has to get mentioned in a public meeting. So,
Jim, thank you for those comments. Never had the chance to serve with Don Culligan. He went off the legislature after all those years, the year that Dooley and I went on back in the 90s. But he had a reputation as a great public servant. And can we take just a second and have a moment of silence for Don Culligan? Thank you. Is there anyone else like to speak on privilege of the floor? Dooley Kiefer.
Well, to continue in the memorial frame of mind, I won't talk about Gwen Ifill. I think that was a huge loss for all of us in the journalism world's responsibility. But there are two other local people that I wanted to mention. Harlan Brumstead was at Cornell for many, many, many years in the Department of Natural Resources. He was a true lover of nature and the land and the environment, and he introduced many, many Cornell students and people in this community to our environment. He is responsible for having fish ponds at Cornell. He was responsible for having living accommodations out at Arnett Forest. There's scholarships in his name. There are many. He's been recognized at the state level for many things, but I remember him because he was one of the enthusiastic Cornell Natural Resource faculty members who was an early member of our Environmental Management Council. And it was wonderful to have someone like him serve on a county advisory board. So I remember him very fondly. The other person I wanted to acknowledge was Don Smith, who was the Emeritus Dean of the Vet College. He was internationally renowned. But the reason that I remember him is because he took very seriously allowing the community to be involved in what should happen with the vet school incinerator. Its emissions were problematic, to put it mildly, and he welcomed the community's being a waste management advisory committee and partaking in studying different options for how to deal with the incinerator, and it was replaced with what the community group recommended, which is alkaline hydrolysis. So he was an exceptionally popular teacher, very nice man. I attribute that partly to the fact that he was Canadian. And I miss him very much, too. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Dooley. Let's go to Martha Robertson next.
Thanks. Two things, I'm glad Deborah's still here. I want to mention there's always something about the housing summit, right? I spoke yesterday with Ilan Shapiro, from Building Bridges and Talking Circles and a couple of other groups. About the summit, he asked whether there was going to be time for people to speak kind of about gentrification issues and the needs of the less privileged folks in our community. I said, we've got about 25 volunteers who've been struggling to work on the program for this summit to try to get lots and lots of voices heard.
how to fit 220 people in through breakfast, lunch, and breaks, and have a chance to hear from our outside speakers. So I told them we have figured a way that if we can get the folks to tell their stories on our Facebook page, then we're going to collect those as, you know, two-minute per person vignettes that we'll show, and J.R. Claiborne's going to introduce those and wrap up that part of the morning. So this is, again, this is December 1st, and the Facebook page is housingtompkins.com, and I regret the tone that Ilan sent a message around encouraging people to get those stories and help people put their stories on Facebook. We've been working really hard to make sure this is an inclusive event. And I really regret that some people have decided to take out personal vendettas about it. So I hope people will go to housingtompkins.com and really get those stories put up there. It's very important that we hear from people, especially folks who, you know, can't come to a day-long meeting, have no interest in coming to a day-long meeting. So I really want to make sure we have good representation from all parts of the community to tell their personal stories about how the housing shortage is hurting them or how it's working for them, whatever your story is. I put this on your desks. How's it that nobody's talked about the election yet? So this is... the two maps here. The first, the top one is pretty familiar looking. This is the traditional map of the Electoral College results from last Tuesday night's election. Looks like a pretty divided country with these, you know, wide swaths of red. The bottom is what's called a cartogram. And I remember seeing this after 2000. This person, Mark Newman from the University of Michigan, has done these. He's a, you know, statistician. The bottom map isn't just red or blue. It's by counties, not by state, but by counties, national, all the counties in the country, red or blue and shades of purple depending upon the percentage of the vote in that county. So that's where the color differentials come from. And the funny shape is that this is what the states look like if you map them according to the number of people who live in those states, not the land mass. So, in fact, the reality of what our country really looks like and what our country said last Tuesday night is the bottom map, not the top map. I'm sorry that the type is so tiny. I tried to get it bigger, but the source is there if you want to go there online yourself. It's also on my Facebook page. What matters about this is that I think it's important when we move on from any election to try to understand what the people have actually said, not what the pundits have said they said. And it's not, you know, I don't consider it sour grapes, just to say that, to point out that Democrats picked up seats in the House, picked up seats in the Senate, and Hillary Clinton won the vote by more than 758,000 votes, her margin being 50% larger than Al Gore's margin was in 2000. So it is what it is. I think the first step to sort of fixing our democracy is recognizing what elections actually mean and how we might tackle the challenge. And I think Barbara Boxer put in a senator from California put in a filed legislation today to eliminate the Electoral College. I'm not sure that's the answer. Mike Sigler and I have been talking about this. I think perhaps a better answer is just proportional allocation of electoral votes per state, which would still give smaller states like a little bit of a, you know, a way to be recognized and not ignored, but would also not just completely ignore people who live in larger states. I will say, for example, if you are in Wyoming, you and 194,716 other people share one elector. 194,000, okay? If you're in Texas, you share an elector with 722,000 other people. That's not really fair. So if Texas had the same number, the same ratio of electors per person, instead of having 38, they'd have 141 electors. California, instead of having 55, would have 200 if they had the ratio that Wyoming has. So this is just, you know, let's look seriously with real numbers. Let's look at what our democracy is doing to us. And, you know, it was a document put together 240 years ago when, by the way, senators were elected by electoral college, too. We changed that. So I just wanted people to really have some tools to understand that this is what our country really looks like, so that we can really try to bridge, which isn't something that really isn't as big of a gap as the top map makes it appear.
Thank you. Anna Kellis.
Thank you, Martha. I really appreciate that. And I want to just acknowledge for my own part, there are some of us here who like to talk more than others, and I happen to be one of them. So I'm just going to acknowledge that. And I won't disappoint Martha. I will join you in talking about the elephant in the room. And acknowledge that we are a country divided. And there's one piece of this for myself that I appreciate in all of it, and I feel that there's a lot that has been brewing under the surface that has come to light. There are a lot of people who felt that they didn't have a voice, and now they feel that they have found a way to have a voice, and I acknowledge that, and I think that that a lot of listening needs to happen. I do want to say one thing, though, from my part. You know, I think most people here know that I teach public health. Some of you may know exactly what that means. I'm still trying to figure it out myself 100%. But one thing that it does mean for me is that it is our job in the government to protect the health of the people. And I do see that as my role, and I am making that commitment to make sure as things change, if budgets change, if support systems change, the one thing that I will always fight for is that everybody has a home and everyone has a food, if that is of a struggle, and that everyone feels safe. And I just want to express some of the experiences personally that I've had over the last week that I've found disturbing up on campus and down in the city, that friends of mine have experienced being harassed as women, one of them having her crotch grabbed, and I'm going to say that publicly because it is something that we can't turn away from. I've had students that have been very scared, students of color, who've come to my office to talk about strategies for feeling safe. And I will fight with every last bit of energy that I have to make sure that there is equality and that we do address any of the lack of dignity that comes up as a result of what has happened over the last week. And I think that we shouldn't close our eyes to some of the things that are happening in the country. Regardless of who wins, I would hope that every single person in this room and every single person in our county and anyone who's listening will fight for those rights and equality together. And that's what I ask humbly of all of us, that we demand it and that we act as model citizens upholding integrity. So, thank you.
Carol Chalk.
It's a little difficult to know how much to say and not say and get into here. We have, you know, a lot of things on our agenda. I just thank you to both Martha and Anna and everybody who participated in the election and came out and advocated for whatever candidates, whatever perspectives. I think that in addition to I listened to the pledge as we said it tonight. I always do. And, you know, we say one nation, undivided. And I think that the divisions that we're seeing, this hasn't just happened in the last week, and it hasn't just happened in the last few years. Since we've been seeing the closer elections, this has happened over a period of decades. And I hope that we will do a better job of, you know, hearing and really understanding where everybody is coming from. In the interest of doing that, I did notice that it is it happens to be Transgender Awareness Week this week. So November 14th to the 20th, culminating in Transgender History Day on the 20th, during which people learn about the millennia-old history of gender identity and how cultures and people relate to their genders. So I wanted to talk about that, a bit about the concept of gender identity, and that's as distinguished from sexual identity and as distinct from what we think of, where your mind goes when you first hear that term, which is to gender reassignment surgery. The concept of gender has been an interesting one throughout history and cultures. You know, all of us know many women who grew up as tom girls. I was one. And boys who were more sensitive than the super macho cultural image. In fact, probably most of us don't think of ourselves as, you know, think of ourselves as some combination of traits that are more sensitive, that in that traditional male definition way, and more frilly and feminine in the ways that we traditionally think of that. But it surprised me to learn about the variety of ways in which cultures, both ancient cultures and modern societies, relate to the concept of gender. Many cultures recognize the ways in which one relates to the world cannot necessarily be measured on what they call a binary scale in terms of gender, but it's more complex. You know, you don't either A or B, binary. We've become familiar with that term through computers. The little pixel is either on or off, or as we say in English, M or F for male or female, but it's something much more complex. I became more aware of this a few years ago, maybe, three or four years ago. A good friend of my daughter's growing up had a baby, and they named the baby, I can't remember now whether, I think it was started out as a girl, and they named the baby, and they sent out all those birth announcements, and people sent little pink frilly things, and 5 months later, the doctor said, you know, we got this wrong. And they literally renamed this baby and has sent out new announcements. And it was, you know, it was something of a traumatic thing. But she took the time and to educate her friends and learn more about the ways in which, you know, there's more assignment at birth of having to make an assumption and maybe do surgery in the year or years following birth than people normally talk about. But even more, The acknowledgement and the studies are now showing that within the last 2 years, the number of people who recognize that they work in, that the people at work that they work with include transgender individuals has doubled from 17% to 35% of workplaces actually have people who identify themselves in some way as not gender binary through those in those traditional ways. And some of the countries and modern societies I learned about that, and you can go on Wikipedia and find this information, in modern societies, I'll read the list of countries that just came off very quickly as having some laws or ways in which people are, it is just recognized that there aren't necessarily just two genders. Australia, Germany, India, Japan, Nepal, New Zealand, Pakistan, the Philippines, and Thailand. Three of those places you can get a passport or your whatever identification papers. You don't have to indicate male or female. You can put X or whatever your language's equivalent of X is literally on your passport.
Yeah, we've got some other folks who'd like to speak.
And through history, it's Mesopotamia and Egypt and Indic cultures, Mediterranean cultures, and in the Americas right here with two-spirit individuals. I just thought it was a good week to a good time for people to become more, educated. The more educated we become about different perspectives and the things we think we understand, the more we can be allies, the more effectively we can be allies to make sure that everybody in our world and our country are treated with respect and equality.
Thank you, Carol. Rich John?
Thank you, Mike. It certainly is a time when we can wonder about our politics and the divisiveness in our community nationally and how it comes down to our local level. But I'm very happy to be talking today about somebody who has just done great service for our community. Jay Franklin came to the Government Operations Committee at our last meeting and talked about Nelson Bills, who's a professor at Cornell. He's in the Agricultural Economics Department. And he has served our community over, I believe, 21 years. And Jay, please correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but he was appointed and then agreed to three reappointments. He is an expert in assessment and has really helped our county be one of the leaders in the state. He helped devise the formula for the agricultural land exemption that's used. He helped develop a pilot project to better assist assessors across New York State in valuing farms. And he also helped keep the New York State Assessors Education Conference at Cornell University every summer for many, many years. And as Jay wants to point out, he was, most importantly, an incredible resource for Tompkins County to call upon for help in assessment matters. I've been on the legislature just over a year now, and one of the things that has impressed me are the number of people that step up to help us on all the committees, all the boards, in so many different ways. And Nelson Bills is just a great example of that. I would ask if you could join me. Let's give him a round of applause.
Thank you for that, Rich. Anyone else? Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to start out by letting you all know that the lovely Within Our Lifetime End Racism Now buttons came from me. A little present for all of you as we think about the work that we continue to do. I had the privilege of attending a conference in Atlanta last week through the weekend,
called Facing Race with a number of other people here from Ithaca. About 2,500 people attended this conference. And it was quite interesting to see the variety of not only workshops, but concentrated discussions around a movement of love for all of us to be able to transform this country to a place where everyone feels loved and included. It was the first time I had gone to a conference in a very long time, and I was very pleased to see something as simple as all gender bathrooms. And they're just really simple things that people can do to make such a difference and make everyone feel welcomed and included. It was amazing to attend some of the workshops, especially the ones on deconstructing racism, or the ones that talk about how entire small communities have transformed themselves in such a way that issues of justice and equality isn't a second thought, but it's just the way we do business every day. And it was encouraging and enlightening, and they're all little things we all could be doing, but we feel very concerned, and more often than not, we resort to our safe space. And I bring that up because I just remember some of the conversations some of my colleagues here around the table had with me around the resolution or proclamation that I brought with regard to Indigenous Peoples Day. And I don't think people realize just the privilege that you exhorted in your statements when you said they can choose any other day. Who are they, and who decided that this day only belongs to a certain group of people? So I just wanted to point that out, because it just sort of, you know, it's things like that that people think of when they decide to embark on a movement of change and inclusion. It was a very powerful conference. It occurs every 2 years, and I would encourage anyone to look for it. It is brought to the community organized by Race Forward, which is an organization. And, I mean, the number of presenters I was just looking through here, from Michelle Alexander, whose book we're reading currently here in Ithaca, to Chris Crass, to Zon Mao, to Issa Nayola, to Van Jones. They were all there and really embracing a movement of love, support, and non-fear, so that not one of us should feel fearful about living next to the other or hiring someone who might be different from us, et cetera, et cetera. And I can go on and on. But it certainly is one I would encourage people to attend. Think of it, legislators. I know we all go to NYSAC, but if we want to make the kind of change we've been talking about through workforce diversity and inclusion, some of the things that we espouse, this might be a good starting point that we spend some of our training dollars to attend, because every issue was addressed, from homophobia to Islamophobia to you name it, it was addressed at this conference. It was, in some respects, a little overwhelming because I couldn't go to every workshop that I wanted to go to.
What was the name of it?
Powerful, Facing Race. And it only occurs every 2 years. And I want to give a big thank you to the Multicultural Resource Center, particularly for being a colon, organizing the group going and reaching out to folks. I got in on the tail end of it because I heard of it. So big thank you to them and raising funds from this community to allow us to go. People literally donated towards paying for people to attend the conference, so I appreciate that. So I hope that you will, you know, I didn't just bring a button just for the sake of bringing a button. It really had meaning to me being there and really hope that we will take this to heart within our lifetime, within the lifetime of the next generation. Racism should not be existing in this country by any means, and no one should feel afraid. I also want to take this time to remind people that on Thursday is GX Annual Harvest Fest. Please, not Thursday, good Lord, Friday. Yes, I am tired. GX Annual Harvest Fest. We, staff and volunteers and board members, participate in preparing a very scrumptious meal, as well as a number of our businesses in the community that support us doing that. And we just want to find a way to give back to our community for all the support we get. And so we provide a harvest meal for well over 300 people in the community, turkey and all the trimmings that go along with it. So please do come, and even if you don't eat, it's a good time to fellowship, to network, to share, and just be in the presence, you know, sharing the love. So I invite you to come down to GX, 6 o'clock on Friday is when dinner is served, from 6 to 7:30. It doesn't mean that if you show up at 7:32, we're not going to give you some. We will. But please do come, and if you feel like volunteering, we'll take your hands to peel some potatoes and stir some greens and whatnot. So come on down.
What time's the
volunteering cookie? Preparation starts from 9 in the morning. You know, there's also set up, you know, tables and chairs and decoration, because we want it to look nice and festive and inviting, and, you know, rolling all those napkins and forks and so on. So anytime from 9 o'clock in the morning, you can come on down to GIEC and put your hands in to help prepare. And from 6 o'clock, come and help serve and or come eat and meet and greet. So,
can I ask a question about that? Do you still need turkeys and pies?
We do encourage the community, if you come, to please bring a dessert to share. It's one way that we share the love. Bring a dessert or two or three to share. If you bring sweet potato pies, please make sure you leave one in my office and take the rest to the dinner. I think we might have gotten all the turkeys already, because we had to get them early. They are smoked by Fat Jack's restaurant. They, thank goodness, they prepare all the turkeys for us. Otherwise, we're all elbow deep in turkeys. So I think we've received all that we needed to at this point.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Peter Stein.
Yeah, I just would like to say a few things about the election. I haven't yet quite recovered from it. And I've spent a lot of time talking to five or six people, namely my children and my grandchildren, who were terribly upset and crying to me over the telephone. And something I say to them is that, well, we've lasted a long time in this country, and things have, over the long run, gotten better, I think. But it really takes some time to figure out what exactly is going to happen. I think this election, I can only think of two other presidential elections that had nearly as much impact on the country and our people. One was in 1860 when Abraham Lincoln was elected, and the other was in 1932 when Franklin Roosevelt was elected, and both of those meant enormously important. If either one of those elections had gone the other way, I don't know whether the country would have survived. And I think this is one of those elections. And there are some people who think that this is a wonderful thing for our country, and I respect their view. I don't think I know the answers to everything, but I must confess that I think this is will be a very difficult moment for this country. And so what do you do about that? And if you feel as strongly as I do, I think you have to just say, look, I trust the institutions. The institutions have always saved us one way or another. But the institutions are passive. It's using the institutions. And I think we have to all think, those of us who are concerned, I think we have to think about what's happened, what we did, that we, and that means, of course, the Democratic Party is who I'm talking about, what we did that made us fail when we thought we were going to win, because most of us thought that we were going to win. I think we have to think about that, and we somehow have to not say that, well, it's all over. I don't think it's all over. And I think we have to commit ourselves to trying to bring the things that we think are important back again. I think it has to be. I don't believe that these things I've been hearing at Cornell, where people went around screaming for many hours. I happen to be walking into one of those groups. I don't think that's very helpful. I think this is a time for thoughtful thinking and talking with others that support us, that where we think the mistakes were, and what we can do to rectify what I think will be something not very good. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Peter. I share many of those sentiments, and thank you, Martha, for bringing this map to our attention, and Anna for the words that you made. The night after the election, there was a rather spontaneous gathering down in the Commons, and I know Anna played a pivotal role in helping make that happen and served as the MC. And it was basically a very informal and I think loving chance for people to reflect on what had happened and what some fears they were having about what lay ahead. There was singing. I was not hearing anger, but deep concern. As I've been moving around our community, I keep having spontaneous interactions with perfect strangers. And, you know, I ask the requisite, how you doing? And keep getting into these long discussions of despair and hopelessness or confusion. You know, I mean, it's been very interesting having just interesting discussions, deep discussions, actually, with people I would never have thought to talk. I find it kind of hard to look at or listen to the news these days. Many people are. But I did go online and find that our president-elect has vowed to represent every citizen in the land. And he called on our country to bind its wounds and come together. And you know, I couldn't agree more. I hope that he will continue that as he puts together his administration and begins to do policies. But in the meantime, we are going to sit around this table and grapple with local issues. And in my experience, regardless of our party label, every person of this body, I think, is trying to do the right thing and listening to each other. And I really, really deeply appreciate that. And I do hope that will continue.
Mike Sigler.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything. Just wasn't. I will say this, that I've heard a lot of people. I mean, I know a lot of people. They've been crying at work. A lot of friends of mine have cried at work. A lot of people are scared. And I'll put this out there, that there are just so many people who stand against racism, against homophobia, against all the things you're talking about. And, you know, we can talk about isolated incidents across the country. And I'll say for myself, all of those things are rejected. All of those people who think that it's a good idea to assault somebody else is rejected by myself and by, frankly, everybody I know. I'm going to use an example, and it ties into something we're talking about. You know, we talk a lot about Islamophobia in this room. We talk a lot about You know, my daughter has a friend who's Muslim. And I hear a lot of people say things like, you know, when you have an assault or you have a bombing or you have a something like, you know, the shooting out in San Bernardino, why don't the moderate Muslims come out and reject that? And I always think, you've got an organization there, a religion with 1.5 billion people. 1.5 billion. And you've got, what, 0.1% of the people who are willing to kill for X. The people I know that are Muslim are thinking, that's not me. And why do I got to reject that? I don't feel as a Christian that I have to reject every nut guy that goes out and shoots somebody. Because that's not what I'm about. So I use the same thing when it comes to Muslims. I go, there's a billion five people. I've got to atone for somebody who's out in a cave thinking I'm going to, you know, destroy two towers in New York City. That's not what I'm about. And listen, I know that there's a cultural clash there, and I don't know how to fix that. I think we can fix that together. I'm not sure. But I think it's the same thing with this election. When people say, I'm scared, I go, you know, I get that you're fearful. But there are so many, you know, good people just around. And the thing that always upsets me is when people say, I'm afraid to go to the police, for example. Because I know a lot of policemen. Everybody in this room knows a lot of policemen. And I don't think anybody in this room says, oh, the policeman I know, he, you know, it's kind of like your congressman. Everybody likes their congressman. The other guy's the jerk. I don't know. I know a lot of policemen. I don't really know too many jerks that are policemen. And I'm more worried about something that Peter said. And we've talked about this before in this room that, you know, when you don't have any faith in the institutions that are your country, that's worrisome to me. And it's been worrisome for a long time, 20 years, where I see people and they say, I'm an X-American or I'm a Y-American. And I'm saying, oh, I don't know, maybe my family, being here since 1640, just had more time to forget about our history. And we just said, yeah, where are we going to go? We're American. I don't know. You know, I'm reading about a guy. He's lived here since he was like 12. And they didn't file the papers right. He's getting shipped back to South Korea. And they're like, I don't even speak. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, for him, he's reunited with his birth parents, apparently. But I'm looking at that case going, okay, what are we doing? I mean, I don't know what to make of that. So I guess just what I want to tell people is, listen, we can get through. I understand some people are scared. I get it. I want you to be less scared. I think that there is a lot of ways forward. I mean, frankly, there are things that just were missed by our government. I mean, I don't think, for example, that people really understood that the IRS was going after conservatives until the Ninth Circuit Court in Washington, D.C. said, hey, by the way, that's not good. You shouldn't do that. And people just ignored it. And it's kind of like the militarization of police. Somehow, over the last 20 years, we didn't ask a lot of questions about, do you really need a tank in your police department? Do you really need that? I understand that it's free, but I don't know. So I guess I just want to tell people out there, listen, we can get through this together. Not through this, but we can do a lot of things together. We can find common ground. You know, we are here for you. And frankly, some of these things that are going to happen in the world simply aren't going to be tolerated. Any kind of abuse that you suffer simply isn't going to be tolerated. And we will work with you to make that the rule of law, because it is the rule of law. And I want you to be able to embrace the rule of law in this country. So thank you very much.
If I could just kind of pick up on the theme that we're talking about tonight, not to say too many words, but if you look at the map of how the vote went, the color's different in Tompkins County than it is for most of upstate New York. outside of the major cities. That says something. We in Tompkins County represent everyone. When we're elected by whatever party we're elected by, we represent everybody, whether they agree with us or disagree with us. We do our best for all of them. And we will continue in Tompkins County to move forward and be a shining beacon. I've said it before, we are the best county, as far as I'm concerned, in New York State, because we think about things, we talk about them, we're careful about how we proceed. We care about people. And, of course, we're hurt. We have a lot of immigrant population here. And I just think I've grown up with our institutions and understand the protections that are out there. But folks that have come from other countries where they don't have that kind of protection have got to be wondering, what will happen to me here? And we need to reassure those folks that we here in Tompkins County will continue to stand up for the values we believe in. We will continue to oppose bigotry. But, you know, we've got an election to look at that said something to us about a part of our population that we probably haven't paid enough attention to, that people that need jobs, yes, they're the white males. That's what we've heard from the pollsters out there. But they're part of our population, too. And we need to think, how can we help them? They may not want to work at McDonald's. They may want to work at a factory where they can earn a progressive salary and move up. How do we get back there? Not going to happen very easily. But we are the best county, and we will talk about it. We will think about it. We will act properly, and we will light our torch for upstate New York and for the country. What I'd like to do now is try to let some of our folks that are in the audience go home by taking some of the resolutions that they're here for. So let's do the, we'll go to the consent agenda, but first, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Not seeing any. Let's go to the consent agenda. We have one advisory board appointment, and that is out of the Government Operations Committee to the Board of Assessment Review, Juan A. DeRuz. Then we have resolutions. If you want them off the consent agenda, just say so. Resolution A, out of Government Operations. That's off. Resolution B, adoption of a portion of taxes for 2017. That's ID 6639. C is return school taxes, ID 6638. D is return village taxes, ID 6637. Out of facilities and infrastructure, resolution C, audit of final payment, Streeter Associates, Tompkins County Court Complex, concrete and masonry restoration project, ID 6694. Resolution F, authorization to execute design funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, Ludlowville Road, County Road 159, Bridge Reconstruction, Town of Lansing, ID 6684. Resolution G, budget adjustment to transfer unanticipated permits, sale of scrap and insurance recovery revenues, Highway Division. That's the ID 6681. And Resolution H, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to rehabilitate the general aviation apron and install perimeter fencing to rehabilitate taxiway A and C, design PIN, sorry, the number there, acquire friction measuring equipment, and acquire snow removal equipment, which is a plow and broom, all for the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 6677. With the one removal, can we have a motion on the consent agenda? Glenn Morey, seconded by Martha Robertson. Ready to vote. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's unanimous.
Wait, were there an appointment too?
I'm sorry?
You said the appointment. Okay.
I did the appointment, yes, at the beginning. All right, let's go to, why don't we go to facilities and infrastructure. Dave, could you do your resolutions?
So Mike, resolution O establishing unit charge for 2017 solid waste annual fee, ID 6687.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion.
For everybody's information, the fee is not changing this year.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And we have Resolution P, authorizing an amendment to the 2017-2021 capital program to acquire and install a jet bridge at Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 6683, and that was pending Budget Committee's approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion. Carol Chalk.
Well, I'd like to hear more about this from Mike or
Mike Hall,
or,
can you come
Joe
to a microphone or the end, whichever you please.
Yeah, okay. And specific questions I have to do with whether we're likely to see any income over time, reimbursement over time from the FAA, what we did to get estimates, and the lifespan of this that says one thing in the memo and another thing in the resolution. So I just want to know which one's correct.
Actually, can I ask that Mike go over the memo? I've been in meetings all afternoon, so just to summarize.
Before you start, Mike, I just want to point out, Kathy's brought to my attention that there was a change made in the Budget Committee review of this, and I think those are in your packet. So I'm assuming, Dave, you're going to move that one, that
version? Yes, I'll move that one.
Okay. Mike, if you could, please.
Sure. So I believe I'm going to start by reading the memo for those of you who have not.
And for folks at home, this is Michael Hall, our airport manager.
This is a background paper on the installation of the jet bridge at the airport. And I said the airline industry is slowly emerging from nearly a decade of turbulence marked by mergers of legacy carriers and significant service reductions in regional markets. One hallmark of this industry transition is a move to jet vice turboprop service. This is a welcome development which opens significant air service options for markets like Ithaca, but we're not currently equipped to handle multiple carrier jet operations. Recently, the airlines have decided to consolidate Southern Tier Air Service at Ithaca because of the strength of our market, which is unusually global in nature, providing significant opportunity for them to profit from subsequent long-haul segments. Concurrent with their decision, both American and United have announced all jet service to Ithaca. Beginning in 2017, all three airlines serving Ithaca will provide jet service. To respect and protect that service, we must prepare to board those jets through industry standard jet bridges. A minimum of two jet bridges will be required. We currently have one. We have proposed to the governor a package of airport developments that are transformational and remain a viable applicant for a second round award to be announced in December. If this award is made, we will likely not need to bond for a second jet bridge. There are also other potential state and federal sources of support for infrastructure development yet to be announced. Bonding is our last resort, but it's a critical step that allows us to proceed. There's a significant lead time required to acquire and install a jet bridge. We've chosen a refurbished model of the same make and configuration as our current bridge to reduce acquisition and maintenance costs. If we receive authority to bond, we can immediately begin the acquisition process while waiting for state and federal support options to play out. There is a quoted 120-day lead time for a refurbished bridge to be delivered. The installed cost for a refurbished jet bridge is estimated at $900,000 with a 10% contingency. The selected bridge will have a projected life of over 2 decades and will service jet aircraft, including the latest versions of Boeing 737, Airbus 320 aircraft with up to 175-seat capacity. My recommendation is that we approve bonding immediately to begin the jet bridge acquisition process, but we remain committed to finding other sources of funds to support this essential development of air service at Ithaca. Now, Carol, you asked specifically about the age of the bridge.
Yeah, I don't know where it was that I saw. Maybe it wasn't in the resolution, but maybe meeting notes, I saw that we're talking 10-year lifespan, and this says 20.
Well, it's a couple of decades. The refurbished bridges are completely sandblasted, so all corrosion is removed from the metal parts. The motors are replaced, the bearings are replaced, the tires are replaced. It essentially becomes a new jet bridge. We chose to match the jet bridge that we have because we have to maintain it. And so once you've learned how to maintain this particular kind of jet bridge, not only do you have spare parts available, but you have technicians that are prepared to go out and work on it. So that's our rationale for going with the Amerobridge, which is the maker of the jet bridge that's installed at the terminal now. And you asked a couple other questions.
What we did to compare prices, I guess we...
You buy it from the manufacturer. We asked for a bid.
Just from one?
Because we need to match what we have.
We already had. Okay, and then the other thing I asked about was whether the FAA ever provides support. We get support from them for a lot of things at our airport. It's amazing what they do. And is this something that they just exclude from what they...
It's possible that there could be federal dollars. It's more likely there could be state dollars associated with this. But we don't have clear paths to either of those funding sources right now. We're working in both areas, but the clear path is that we would do this with our own capital as opposed to getting a grant. I can't tell you which way it's going to go this evening. What I can tell you is that the situation matures. We'll be coming back to you to give you a current state of the developing process, timing, and what have you, and seek your counsel at that point.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the forthright answers. I absolutely support doing this. I think we are very lucky to have our airport here. I think we have a beautiful, beautiful airport. I'm so happy every time I go through there, which isn't often enough, to go out and see other places and get to come back. To join the future, we need to be able to accommodate jets, and I'm so pleased that we're going in that direction and that we are going to see jet service increased here. It's wonderful. I did go online and look at, I was just a little shocked by the size of the figure, and so I went online and looked at, why do they really cost that? What are other places paying for their jet bridges or air bridges or whatever they call them in different places? And I did find some information with what looked like lower prices, but in fact, as I looked back at it, it was places that were buying 50 or 60 of them at a time, and I guess were able to go and really bid amongst many manufacturers. So I'm pleased to know a little bit more about why it makes sense for us to go to the one.
Joe Mariana.
Yeah, just Carol, your eye is really good in terms of there is reference in the bond authorization to a 10-year period of probable usefulness. Oh. That doesn't say how long it's going to last. It says how long it's really a limitation on how long you can borrow for. So for this particular piece of equipment, there's a limitation under law that you can only borrow for 10 years. That's where you saw it was in the bond authorization.
Okay. Yes.
The expectation is it will live much longer than that.
Martha?
So what will be our annual debt service cost? What's our annual debt service cost?
Probably $120,000 or so, I would guess. And that's, again, that's if we actually have to go out and borrow this. And I think Mike has made it very clear, and we tried to do it in the resolution as amended and in the memo that Mike prepared. We look at this as last resort financing. We really are hoping the state comes through with the state money, and if that fails, that we will be able to find other grant money or airport money to pay for this. So this is last resort financing.
Okay, so are we doing the bond resolution or the capital program modification?
We're doing both, aren't we?
There are two.
What's on the floor right now?
The capital plan.
So the resolution P as adopted. Okay. I think this is great news, and Mike, your leadership in I dare say making Ithaca's airport rise among the three that were, you know, in the southern tier in competition. I think this is huge. I agree. I'm really, really pleased at how this is going. However, people here know that the airport is an enterprise unit, and we do not put property tax money into it. The only exception to that is is foregoing, what's the total, $100,000 for a couple of years?
$125,000
for the last 3 years to try to help them through. That was administrative overhead that had gone into our budget from airport fees, and for 3 years we that was an in-kind contribution. When I won this seat in 2001, I sat down with Joe Lally, the person that I beat. I said, all right, Joe, tell me, you know, what are the main issues here? What should I be looking out for? The number one issue was, he said, I'm worried you're going to have to put property tax money into the airport to keep it afloat. So that was 15 years ago, and so far we've scraped by without doing that, except for $125,000 for 3 years. So this is new. This is different. This is a big deal. I don't in any way want to keep doing this. We can't. What, $120,000 a year debt service is from county property tax is money that's not going somewhere else. And I regret that we haven't had more of a discussion of that policy issue. I understand the timing here, and Mike and I have spoken about this, that it was at the last legislature meeting that he would have reported on from the Transportation Committee's discussion, but the meeting got so long and we ended up just skipping chair reports, committee chair reports, and so that's why we didn't have this conversation around this table. Normally we would get a little bit of a heads up, well, a lot of a heads up about a policy change like this. And this is, I just want to make it clear that we need that kind of process when we're making big decisions like this, when we're changing policy. So I would like the record to show that I am troubled by the lack of process here. And I want to make sure local taxpayers know that this is an exception to the rule, and that I appreciate Mike's efforts in finding lots and lots of other ways out, other avenues to bring those resources from somewhere else, and hope that those are successful. I will wait and see how I'm going to vote on this, because I'm really I'm not pleased with the process. I agree it's an important project, and I want it to go forward, but I may withhold my support at this time.
Martha, I think you're right. This is a change in something that we have normally done. We did have a discussion about it when we forewent the administrative payments a couple of budgets ago. This is something really new, and we've been very proud of the fact that we've been an enterprise airport. When other airports around us have actually put a lot of money into them, a lot of taxpayer money. So I would hope that your point continues to be possible, that we won't have to put taxpayer money into it. But the world is changing in airlines, and we're trying to get advantage of it, and it sounds like our airport's taking some advantage, and we may have to help make this transition a little better, and so that's what I'm hoping. And I wish I had been able to make that report to the group. I probably and I take responsibility for not having done that. I should have. I know it went to F&I, but it probably should have been discussed with everyone here previously. Let's go on. I've got on my list. I've got Jim Dennis next.
The resolution that Dave presented, we have a resolution in the Budget Committee that has added language to it. So
I think that's the one he presented.
Yes, I asked him about that, and he's actually moving your budget resolution.
Ah, okay.
Okay, with that change.
I have to pay better attention.
Mike Sigler.
I actually want to thank Martha first off. To be honest, it really didn't occur to me that it was that big of a policy change. So I thank you for bringing that forward. I'm going to lead off with kind of saying too that I'm just amazed at the kind of the work that Mike's team has been doing here. I mean, I read the article about the Binghamton Airport this week. It was in the paper, and it's interesting. I started flying out of the airport. And so I've flown to all these airports now. I've flown to Elmira, and I flew to Binghamton. And you fly into them, and you're like, these are big airports. Binghamton, they've got different, two runways. And you're looking around going, oh, and there's different taxi instructions and things. And you're thinking, man, and yet they don't do anywhere near the business we do. And I'm amazed at how just things have changed just in the past 3 years for our airport and how it's just so much different and how much just we're so much better of an investment than the other airports. I mean, I hate to say that, but I mean, this is where the growth is happening in our area. And if the state, I don't understand the $40 million going to Elmira, to be honest with you. I just don't get it. I kind of get it, but whatever.
Yeah, you do.
But I mean, it's just, I'm so proud of the team we have. But again, Martha, thank you for bringing that up because I really hadn't considered that. But I just think this is such a positive step forward for us that I frankly, and with Carol's support, I think we should name every bridge that's going up in the county now a jet bridge because clearly that has worked on you.
Anna Kellis.
I first, something that
I... more than four entities have to pass over it.
That's okay. I'm happy to, we're going to have moments of comic relief. I'm happy to support that. It seems to me, and I guess, Mike, you can speak to this, but there's a lot of things are all about timing, and there seems to be a focus right now across the state as far as, and also funding across the state, for developments in airports that we're trying to capitalize on. And so I guess I have a few questions because, I absolutely agree with what Mike is saying. We do a tremendous amount of business, and I think that the airport should align with the needs that we have. First, I know that there are some big pockets of state funding. How would us making this sort of one-time commitment, because I also want to respect what Martha's saying, which I really appreciate, and that was a very astute observation, and I also didn't know that, so that was very educational, so thank you. But there are times where exceptions are helpful. If we do this now, how competitive does that make us on the state level is, I guess, my first question. I have two questions, but I'll let you answer that first.
I'll tell you that it makes us more competitive. Whether we spend any money out of this bond resolution or not, it puts some skin in the game. We bonded originally to build the terminal. We have not bonded, to my knowledge, for the airport since then. This is part of a terminal enhancement that has to take place. Elmira got their $40 million, and then they put their application in. The news this evening is that Elmira has sold the former Sikorsky facility, with which I'm very familiar because it used to be Wings of Eagles. That's probably how they're going to raise the $20 million that they had to raise to make this whole package go. I know that we are still under serious consideration, or I believe we're still under serious consideration at the state for an award of some amount, which hopefully will cover this expense. But I think being willing to shoulder responsibility to protect what we've worked hard to achieve plays positively. So that's my opinion.
So making the commitment with us right now actually may increase the likelihood of getting the funding that we may need to do this work and expansion and be competitive and stay competitive.
My opinion is that that's correct.
Okay. And if this, by chance, is not the method of funding this, I know, Joe, you mentioned this being the last. We wanted to secure it, but this is obviously the last effort that we would make and use. What other things are possibilities of avenues for funding this, that this would be the last resort of? If that is the first one, are there others in line that you feel there are possibilities?
If I may, the first and foremost is the governor's upstate airport renovation competition, if you will. That was $200 million. $80 million has been awarded, 40 each to Rochester and Elmira. It was a match for the money the governor wanted to spend to do LaGuardia, and politically he was compelled to spend the same amount upstate. That's number one. Number two, the New York State Aviation General Fund, if you will, is growing, and it provides not nearly $200 million a year, but a tenth of that. And that's another place that we could seek support. You voted earlier on a resolution accepting $650,000 to build the East Hill Flying Academy at the airport. It's that fund that provided that money. So that's another state option. And then there are a variety of federal possibilities, not as strong as the state money right now, depending on what a new administration does about infrastructure. Hard to say.
So this is Plan D, first of all, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And our vote tonight could influence our competitiveness for some of those. That's also important, I think, to note.
If I could just add one more thing to the mix that Mike explained, there's also revenue generated at the airport itself. Our strategy is to turn things around. Our strategy is to build business there, and I think you're hearing from Mike how that's happening. To the extent that we can solidify this jet service and increase activity at the airport, that's money in the bank. And that's money that would be available to pay for these kinds of improvements as opposed to coming back to the county for support. So that's another source of revenue.
Thank you.
Okay. I've got Leslin and Martha, then I'd really like to get to, I guess, Julie.
Mr. Chair, I just want
to get to a vote. Go ahead, Leslin, you have the floor.
Mr. Chair, I just do want to thank Martha. You know me. I normally don't vote for things when it's outside of a process that I haven't been involved in. But there's something about trying to remain competitive and knowing, you know, we know the airport gets a lot of grants, and trusting that we will be able to get this back from our airport. Our airport has been, you know, a little bit underperforming revenue-wise for a number of years. And so, you know, if they need a leg up to be able to get to a place where we can bring in the sort of revenues and remain competitive and keep the airlines that we have, I think that we can do that, knowing full well that it is going to come back to us. And that's perhaps the reason why I'm feeling a little bit more inclined to support this than I ordinarily would have, not to mention Mike promised me something. I'm not going to mention it. But at some point, more importantly, I'm hoping at some point we can have a more in-depth discussion about, because things might change, what county support for the airport might look like, not in its entirety, but perhaps we might have to look at that at some point. We've talked about this for I don't know how many years since the Air Service Task Force was in place before the Air Service Board. But at some point, we may have to look at this, and that point might be now that we look at a strategic plan for 5 years from now about what is it that we are willing to, as a county, invest in our airport. Again, not in its entirety, but I hope that on F&I agenda, on our whatever legislature strategic planning budget agenda, that we really consider that.
Okay, let's go to Dooley, who hasn't spoken, then Carol, then Martha. Please be crisp. Let's get to a vote.
Well, I have a couple of questions for Mike. When do you expect the first of these small jets to come to your airport?
February 17th. It's in the schedule.
How many? Will all of the planes be replaced at that time, or will they be replaced over a rolling period?
On February 17th, American Airlines shows all jet service. United Airlines expects to go all jet in the third quarter of 2017. We can share a jet bridge now, as we did this summer when American did a trial run with jets in Ithaca. We can share a jet bridge between Delta and American, but it's a little bit awkward, obviously, if somebody gets broken on the jet bridge. Now you got another flight coming in, and that's why we think we can get by. Ultimately, we're going to need three, but we think we can get by with two bridges serving three airlines until we are able to gain outside support to completely do the terminal security enhancement and expansion, which would leave us with three jet bridges after that's done.
Carol?
Yeah, I want one.
I wasn't finished.
I'm sorry, Dooley. I thought you were done.
No, I was absorbing what Mike said. So it sounds as though with the, you said 120-day lead time is needed for a second jet bridge, that if it won't be until the fall of 2017 that you need the second one on hand, that there is time to not go out to bond yet, that we have a little bit of time that we could have this policy discussion. I absolutely have the same reaction that Martha had when I saw this. It is a definite policy change, and although some legislators on the relevant transportation and F&I committees knew about it, those of us who aren't on those committees didn't know anything about it. And we, I think, would have had that policy discussion, Mike Lane. I'm sorry you both have the same first names.
It's a great first name.
Yes, it is. And there are lots of Mikes around. So I understand. I was going to at first suggest that it would make sense to put something in the resolution itself indicating our policy and how this is not an exception. This is only an exception, a one-time to that policy. But if we put our policy in the resolution, I recognize that that would not help Mike Hall's case with the state. So we're left in this, I feel, in limbo. I cannot have a record of what I think needs to be in the resolution itself. I certainly want our discussion to reflect the fact that this is a major policy change that has not been dealt with in our usual manner. I would like to see the timing of a bond resolution put off to take advantage of the few months that I think Mike Hall's description of the timing of the arrival of jets give us, which would probably take us into December, which would mean we would have a sense of what the state is going to do for our airport. It doesn't say I wouldn't vote for this resolution with the understanding that it won't be put into effect right away, and I'm asking a question. Is it possible to support this resolution and not have it acted on right away? If not, I don't think I can vote for this policy change this way. I don't know who can answer me.
Once this resolution is adopted, it is the, unless there's any language limiting it put into it, it is the approval of this legislature.
Point of information, this one is just authorizing changing the capital plan.
We're going to go to the other resolution as soon as we get done talking about this one, I hope.
Yeah, well, I guess I was discussing both resolutions at the same time.
What?
Joe?
Yeah, I can speak to timing, and Rick could also. This is the authorization we need to go out into the markets. But as you may recall, when a number of other bond resolutions were passed a couple of weeks ago, it is to prepare these bondings to go into the market in February. So we need this lead time to make sure that we are ready to go into the markets. Again, Rick's timing, I believe, is in early February,
yeah,
sometime in February.
Price
the bonds in January.
And the pricing of the bonds is about 1 month before, about mid-January.
So we will know what the state is going to do vis-a-vis more money for our airport before then.
We might, I think the state's talking about a December timeline for at least some of the other $40 million grants. Whether they all are announced at the same time, I don't know, but we have heard about a December round of announcements.
All right. Can we go on to Carol? Please be short, Carol.
I think Martha was first.
No, she's already spoken. I want to get the ones that haven't spoken first.
I asked questions as well. I did speak. Anyway, I wanted to answer Mike Sigler a little more seriously than in my offhand comment. Just to give an answer to what you pointed out. I'm interested in seeing us have clear policy, you know, especially as we spend capital money, but also maintain the flexibility to take advantage of opportunities as they come up and when we really need to. I'm real interested in making sure that when we do that, it's in a self-conscious way, that we're clear about what we're doing and whether it's an exception or whether we're changing policy. I've been here almost 9 years, and I don't remember in all that time having a discussion about exactly what how we determined what the enterprise zones were, enterprise units were, which are in them, how we put them in there. I know that we have a tradition and a precedent of asking those units to be tubs on their own bottom and support themselves, and we have made exceptions over time where we've had particular opportunities, I believe, in solid waste. At some point, when we don't have a decision pending on the floor, I think it would be really useful to engage in that conversation. The reason that I call it out to do with bridges whenever it comes up is because we don't have a bridge policy. We have a policy about the airport. We have a policy about solid waste. We have a policy about highways, about roads, that we rate the roads and we're going to, you know, spend on them in a certain order, and it's the fact that we don't even have a policy about it. So I'm interested in seeing that we make sure we have policies for things like that, and I'm interested in knowing at some point where it's written, because I'd like to look it up, that we never spend money on the airport, as opposed to that having been in tradition.
I don't think there's a written policy.
So. Just our budget.
Thanks. In our budget, right.
It's in our budget that we... that we have zero, you know, target money there, or however we but it, I don't.
Let me go
anyway,
to Martha.
Even if we do, I'm interested in having us take advantage of this opportunity, and but again, be self-conscious about it. So I appreciate Martha raising the question.
Martha, then Jim, please be short.
Okay, I am now one of the. Or maybe the biggest problem with our employments has been people getting canceled because of weather, and very often it's weather somewhere else, right? Newark or Philadelphia. Will jets versus prop planes, will those planes be better able to deal with weather? I mean, is this going to put us in better shape? It's like, you know, you're driving on snow tires instead of
regulars in a storm?
It will put us in somewhat better shape, but the big thing that's going to put us in better shape is American Airlines has redesigned their flow in and out of Philadelphia, which should improve the service between Ithaca and Philadelphia. The jets are more flexible. They're more reliable. It's not just weather. It's also been broken airplanes. This is a step in the right direction. Jets also are scalable. We're not buying 50-seat airplanes anymore. They're buying 65-seat airplanes. They're buying 90-seat airplanes. And the way to recover our numbers in terms of air service, which were limited for the last 5 years, not by demand but by available seats causing higher ticket prices, is to get into this jet movement.
Okay, so in other words, so they will be able to increase the number of seats per flight, and
right,
therefore we hope ticket prices, do we, like, really ticket prices will come down? Or
well, they're going to manage their business as they manage their business, but with more seats available, the general notion would be that we would hold our own or become more affordable.
Okay. Great. Is this something that we need 10 votes for?
Yes, it is.
All right. Can I ask that in the second to last whereas that we talk about the annual cost here? So I see in the where the word potentially was added in this resolution, requiring the county to issue general obligation debt to support the cost of the improvement and to potentially bear the cost of ongoing debt service, which will be approximately $120,000 a year. Does that make sense?
I just ran it at 3%, and it's 117 at 3%.
So is that a correct statement, and is that an okay place to put it, to show what the annual cost is?
That's where you'd put it.
So bear the cost of ongoing debt service, comma, which will be approximately $117,000 a year. And it's clear that it's a 10-year bond. Is that right? Or is that, should we say that there as well?
It's in the bond authorization. It sets it at 10 years. So.
All right, might as well say it here, which will be approximately $117,000 a year for 10 years. Is that okay? Is that friendly?
Would those changes be friendly, Dave?
I'm not sure we can really say the 117,000. We don't really know at this point in time what that percentage rate's going to be.
Well, I've got which will be approximately $117,000 a year for 10 years.
Okay. Friendly.
All right, who was seconded? I forgot.
I was. Can you tell me what line you're reading from?
Well, this doesn't have line numbers. It's the second to last whereas.
What?
You're not talking about the one that came out of budget capital and
personal. Yes, I am, which does not have line numbers.
Yes, and I'm looking at the one that says, whereas neither federal nor airport enterprise funds are currently available. Is that the one you're referring to? And you're asking
so at the end of that.
And you're asking for the actual amount to be added in.
Approximately.
Yes. Potentially bear the cost of ongoing debt service, comma, which will be approximately $117,000 a year for 10 years.
Do we have a sense of how much, what's the variance that we might expect around that value? How wide might that vary?
You mean between the annual debt service payment, you mean?
The value that was stated of $117,000, how much higher or lower might that go?
If that is widely varied.
Well, my point is,
it depends on what the market is. I think right now a 10-year bond at 3% is probably a pretty conservative number, my guess. You might be able to bring it in a little bit lower than that. But if things hiccup a little bit along the way, I don't know if you – I think as long as you use the word approximately.
You feel okay with that?
I think it would be okay.
Because my concern, if it's could be double that, if it could be half,
oh, no,
that's huge variance around a value. But if you feel comfortable that it would be a wiggle around that, then that's friendly to me.
I think it'd be a great
right,
wiggle.
That's friendly. Okay.
All right. With that, I will. I'll vote to support it. But I really want the record to show that we've had this conversation, Kathy, that this was a policy issue and that it's a departure from previous policy. Thanks.
Jim, then please let's vote.
No. My question was going to be to Rick and Joe, and in the interim, they've got answered. So I'm ready to vote.
Again, because it's an amendment to the capital plan, it requires 10 votes. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? There's one opposed, so that is more than two-thirds, so that is adopted. Let's take the other resolution that is its companion here out of budget. Jim, would you please move resolution?
Yeah, the bond reso. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1 million in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of acquiring and installing a jet bridge at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Have we had it all, I hope? All right, we have a roll call on this. Again, it takes two-thirds.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Jam?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No, and I'd like the record to show that my displeasure is not with the airport or the airport manager and his hard work. It's with the process that has led us to this.
Duly noted. Proceed with the roll call, please.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 1 no.
That is adopted.
Thank you, Chair.
Well done.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Dan Klein.
I know we have several staff people waiting for various resolutions. I know it's break time. I believe our assessment director is waiting for Resolution A, which I believe will not take any amount of time. Is it possible we can move that?
If you, at your request, absolutely. You want to move Resolution A?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes,
I'd like to. That was the one that was taken off the consent agenda.
Thank you. I move Resolution A, canceling the tax debt on extinguished tax parcel number 4-1-22-2.
Second by Will. Discussion? Dooley?
I pulled it off just so that the year in which this first part, this parcel was created, could be inserted in the resolution. I can't find the resolution at the moment. Thank you. It's the second whereas in 2007 the county assessor created a parcel.
Is that friendly, Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
Friendly to the seconder, friendly to Will. All right, ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Okay, so sorry to the folks that are still waiting, but we're going to take 10 minutes and we'll come back and we'll do the rest of the resolutions. We're back in session. Still with Dan Klein in government operations. Dan, can you move Resolution I?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Resolution I, appropriation of $15,000 from contingent fund to undertake a structural, mechanical, and codes assessment of the property located at 106-112 North Tioga Street.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion? Ready to vote?
Can we just get some public conversation about what this is?
Joe, do you want to talk about it?
I could. Want me to go long or short?
Short, please.
I can because we've talked about this in prior meetings. I think all of you know that we've joined with Rod Howe and the History Center in looking for a potential new location. First of all, for the History Center, whose lease expires in 2018, and the county has an interest in this because we underwrite the cost of their occupancy. So what began as a look-see for new space for the History Center expanded with a concept that has now been called the Heritage Education Center, which Rod has helped develop, which is basically a coming together of a number of complementary not-for-profits who are involved in history, heritage, and culture in this community in search of a location where they can all co-locate. One of the buildings that they've looked at is the Tompkins Trust Building on Bank Alley in the Commons. There is an interest in exploring that for possible use by the Heritage Education under county ownership. It's a possibility that we would like to explore. And as a part of that exploration, we need to know with precision the condition of the building, the structure, the mechanicals, and a codes assessment of the building, so we have a very clear picture of what's involved in that. That will take approximately $15,000 for a professional firm to do that assessment for us. We think it can be done in 60 days. If that turns out the way we would hope, we would come back to the legislature to keep going on this series of decisions that could lead to an acquisition. So this is, again, another step in the exploration of this property for use by the Heritage Education Center under county ownership.
Martha?
Thanks, Joe. And I'm not trying to drag things out, but this is an important issue, and I wonder if Rod could give us an update on kind of where things are with the other, with the History Center and the other agencies that were interested in working together, and architectural studies and things that you're looking at.
Ron Howe is here. He's the director of the History Center.
Good evening, Joe. You have that spiel down very well. I've heard you give that a couple of times. So the other folks that have talked about being interested in moving into the center are the Visitor Center, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the one that's downtown, the Community Arts Partnership, the Wharton Studio Museum having a presence. The Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation wouldn't have space, but they would like to donate the Tommy plane to be a permanent exhibit in this new Heritage Education Center. The Historic Ithaca, again, not all of Historic Ithaca, but we're talking about combining our libraries into one library and then doing some programming at the space and maybe having an office where a staff person would occasionally come. Perhaps the executive director of the Discovery Trail would be co-located here. The Hangar Theater, potentially if Ithaca Festival felt they needed an office, the Dorothy Cotton Institute being present in this building, and then some others have surfaced. We are going to do in concert, if this moves forward, with the engineering study and architectural review, just to make sure that all of these pieces could fit together. The main floor would obviously be devoted to the visitor center and exhibit space, and we're really wanting to make sure it's an integrated experience. The language that we're starting to use is that we want this to be a spectacular place to come to. But there's some other possibilities that are sort of in the backdrop if anyone falls out. So we have a robust set of partnerships. Does that answer?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Okay. Carol?
Yeah. I just wanted to thank Tompkins Trust for engaging in these conversations with us and giving us the time to look into this. I mean, talk about being a fantastic corporate citizen to be willing to, you know, if there's any time, we heard the figures from the city tonight, what they're seeing about, you know, their assessed value and the way that the numbers have picked up, we've got the commons finished. If there's any time that a business entity could decide, I just want to put this on, you know, the open market and get the absolute top dollar for it, this would be it. You know, 3 years ago, maybe, when the commons was all torn up and facing 3 years or 5 years of that, you know, maybe, but to do this today, they are just, that's amazing that they're willing to do this, and I hope it sets a high bar for others to follow. So I thank you, and I do hope that, you know, we're carefully and deliberately moving through this process with them. We're starting with, you know, doing these structural, mechanical, and codes assessment steps, and we will see where it goes. So I appreciate all of you who've worked on this.
All right, let's vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, takes a roll, short form roll call. Sorry.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Does anyone want to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous. Thank you. All right, who else we have? Let's go to public safety. Peter, do you want to move resolution N?
If I can find it, yes, I would like to move it.
Appropriation from contingent fund for offender watch program out of the sheriff's office, ID 6618.
Right.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson.
This is a routine resolution that brings in a something that's needed, namely that we're required to keep sex offender information up to date, and we're getting new software that will enable us to do that. So that's what I'd like to move on.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Dooley?
As I read over the language in the resolution, I was brought up short in the second whereas, and I would like to suggest what I think is an improvement in wording for the second half of that second whereas, to say are required to register as a sex offender in the jurisdiction where they reside.
I'm not open to, I don't have it yes. open to the.
Do you
just
want to
like
repeat
I'm,
that, Dooley, please?
Yes.
Yes, so that's fine with me.
Is it all right with the seconder?
Sure.
Absolutely. All right, with that change, are we ready to vote? Short form roll call again.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Is there anyone who wishes to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous. Thank you.
I guess I should report that our next meeting is the day after tomorrow.
Who else is waiting for anything tonight other than discussion?
Marie Bunce for the jail study. For the jail study.
Rich John, you want to move resolution M, please?
Yes. This is a motion authorization to execute an agreement with the Center for Governmental Research to undertake a criminal justice jail population trend analysis.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Bridge?
This is the selection made by the Jail Study Committee after consideration of two candidates. CGR is located in Rochester, New York. The other candidate is a California company. We had written materials received from both groups, and we had video conferences where we allowed them to make a presentation and then had questions. After talking to both of them, we had a discussion of the expanded committee charged with making the decision. That was the Jail Study Committee together with Patricia Buchel from probation, Captain Bunce, and Joe Mariana. And it was unanimous to pick CGR.
Discussion? Ready to vote? Dooley? Then Carol?
I was able to attend the two, I guess, crucial jail committee, study committee meetings at which the two vendors' documents were looked at, and then later the two vendors were interviewed by Skype. And I did take the time to read the proposals in some detail and left convinced with the fact, in my mind, that although the Center for Governmental Research in Rochester has been in business for a century and done a lot of governmental studies, their track record and expertise in the field where we need help, which is particularly innovative alternatives to incarceration, did not impress me anywhere near the way the information from the law and policy place in Berkeley did. And I think that since you get what you pay for, if it costs more to bring the Berkeley group here for a comparable period of time, it would be well worth it because of the cost that we may be faced with in building a new jail. So I don't agree with the committee's recommendation. I feel very strongly about that. So I'll have to vote against this resolution, too.
Carol?
So I have a question having to do with we had a lot of people in here for all of the steps when we actually spend money on our jail. And a very specific request to make sure to involve them and at any points at which we were going to be studying the jail, not only with interpreting the results from studies, but the ways in which the questions are framed, and to do that in a more public way, in a way that engaged in some process, asking for input on that, and I think they left us. We had some email addresses, people we were communicating back and forth with at the time. Public safety was, the committee was. Was anything like that done along the way?
Rich?
All of the meetings the jail study committee has held have been open to the public, other than our executive session when we deliberated. We've made a point of receiving public statements. Certainly our first meeting, we had several speakers. We have had, I think we had a speaker at our last meeting, but we are striving to have every meeting be open to the public and to receive as much input as possible. And I'd also say this is the beginning of the process, that certainly my intent as the chair of the committee is to continue and to invite groups within our community to come in and, you know, help us. We want to get this one as right as we can.
So, well, then maybe you could tell me something about what this stage actually involves, the analysis. Do they just put numbers into a template, or do they come and do interviews? What will this involve?
The next stage would be a site visit by the consultant to meet community members, and also to they're going to. In fact, I'll give my jail study committee report, which is beyond our last meeting of selecting a consultant. We will be having a video conference, presumably with CGR, if the vote is as we anticipate tonight, on Thursday at 5:00. And it is to initiate discussions, so that will be open to the public, and it will be a first opportunity to hear from the consultant and for the committee to speak with them. But following that, the consultants will be coming down to meet community members, but also to be collecting data and to begin the analytical process.
Cool. So what are they going to tell us? What form is the answer? Is the material going to take?
We don't know that yet.
Yeah,
we don't know that yet.
Okay.
Can I?
Let's go on.
Take a shot.
I've got. Do you want to respond to Carol or what?
I thought it was next anyway.
No, I have Leslin, Martha, okay. Anna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm apologizing because I haven't had a chance to read all the proposals as Dooley had. So I am interested in hearing what is it that we are hoping to find out that's would be different than any of the other jail studies we've done over the last however many years we've been doing these? What is it different that we're hoping to find out now?
I think we're trying to get a really an updated view. I mean, if you look at the last jail study from 2002, you know, that's 14 years ago, we're looking at where we are now. Certainly since then, there have been the introduction of many different initiatives through ATIs and SOs, alternatives to incarceration and enhanced sentencing and supervision options, I think it is the other acronym. But those were not all in place in 2002. So part of what the consultant will be doing will be looking at those and trying to assess what impacts they are having currently. They are also going to look at marginal efficiency improvements they may see that we could make in our current programs, but also new and different programs that may be available to us to try to control jail population. They'll also be looking at demographics in the county, trying to predict where we may be in the future in terms of jail needs. Did that answer your question?
Thank you.
Martha?
Yeah, I don't think we've done this before. We've had some pretty boilerplate, sure, here's your population, just draw a straight line, you're going to need that many beds in 10 years or 4 years or whatever. So this one is really, as Rich said, looking at not so much the jail, but the whole system of how people travel through the system, of, you know, what difference does counsel at first arraignment make, for example, that's actually moved people, kept people from even being booked. So, but all sorts of things, including, and we sort of decided when we were deliberating that they had sent us the full reports that they'd prepared for Stillman County and Chemung County. And those are impressive to see the kinds of suggestions they made and the kinds of benefits that were predicted. But we also thought, we've done that stuff. We've done what those places have done. What we want to do is, yes, have them examine all our steps through the process and examine demographics, et cetera, but also try to scour the landscape and see is there other things that we haven't tried that are, like, really thinking out of the box and what might be productive, and not even specifically in criminal justice, but housing. If we, you know, if we had reentry housing, how would we see that impact our incarceration rates? So we haven't done this kind of study before.
I beg to disagree with you a little bit, Martha. There's some things that you're saying that we might not have touched on, like reentry housing. We've looked at it, but we haven't gone in depth. But we have done a fully in-depth study of the jail and, at that time, whatever ATI programs we had and how one was impacting the other. But I don't want to argue about it.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think the to respond to Dooley's concerns, I initially liked the California firm better. But then I looked deeper, and we got their package, a bigger package from them that included, for example, reference letters. And I started realizing a big packet of reference letters were from 1994, 1997, 1998. The newest one was like one from 2005. I thought that was curious. So I went online and looked, because they had named a bunch of other counties, locations where they had worked subsequent to 2005. So I thought, well, why are there no reference letters from those counties? So you go online and just look at the public articles, and it was kind of clear that a trail of turmoil seemed to follow that firm. And rather than kind of try to sort out who was right and who was wrong, and like okay, I don't think we need that. And then the video interview was really very unimpressive from that
that firm. So I think that the CG, that the Rochester firm will, they know what they're doing, and our plan is to really make sure that they really look around for innovative programs and ideas that are way beyond what Steuben and Chemung counties might have even entertained, but things that we might be very interested in pursuing.
Anna.
I wanted to acknowledge, Dooley, what you're saying. When I read the proposals, I felt very similarly. I was leaning in the direction of the ILPP from California Group. I liked that they were aggressively prioritizing an evaluation of the ATIs prior to a consideration of investing huge amounts of money in development as their tone in their proposal. I felt that it was a more creative group in their exploration of that in the written word. And the other piece that I was impressed with is the diversity in the backgrounds and expertise of the individuals on that team. So for me personally, I was very disappointed when it came to the interviews. I think I was quite explicit with my opinions prior to the interviews. So that sort of expresses the extent to which I was disappointed that I actually switched my my vote on that. I don't think that either group was 100% what I would want, but I did not feel that there was sufficient research that was done into who we are, the extent of the work that we've already done. I did not feel that the group from California did their work. I think there was significant energy put into telling us that we didn't know anything. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that we have done a lot here. I would like to see an evaluation of what we've already done and some creative things that we could do. I think that we are of the county, of many counties in New York State, we are open and willing to get creative, and that's something that I take pride in, and I didn't feel that there was room for that. So, you know, in some points I actually was offended during that interview, quite frankly. So I share your concerns with the group that is in New York State. I hope that they can meet us in that very creative space to look at the alternatives to incarceration activities that we're already doing. And I am going to hold myself to that I certainly emphasize that. We have some low-hanging fruit in our county that we could address that may make significant differences and reductions in our jail population, I think, before, you know, looking into expansion. At least I would like to see them evaluate it. If our population is substantial amount of our jail population has mental health issues and has drug issues, and we do not have a detox center, we don't have a treatment center, and we don't have a comprehensive program in place to deal with mental health issues in the jail, then we have tremendous room to grow. So if we already know that, but we want to have them evaluate opportunities to explore and expand into those areas, and we already know that, then I think that we can influence them in a positive way, and I think we can build a partnership. So I'm hopeful is what I'm saying, because we already have a sense of where we want to go and what we'd like to explore. And I think that that also may address, Leslyn, some of your questions, that as a committee member, those are things that I will certainly emphasize. So I feel hopeful because of what we already know. I certainly felt that there was a professionalism there that I respected.
Okay, we've got three who would like a second shot. Let's please be brief. Dooley, Carol, Rich, and then let's vote.
So I took the time to write out my thoughts, and all the legislators received them. I'm not anxious to read that to the public, although I could do that tonight. I want to summarize by saying that some of the committee's disappointment, in my view, is the fact that the interviews, the electronic interview was only with the principal from the California firm. That was because he had to be home. He explained it was kind of embarrassing to listen to. His daughter the night before had been out. She binged on Halloween candy. She was sick to her stomach. She was home. She was sleeping now. He had to be home with her. There was no one else to be home. His wife is a professional scientist. She was somewhere in the other side of the world doing research. So he began by saying why he was the only one who was there. And I know I was disappointed not to see the other members of the team because it is a very diverse team. I think there's an African-American sheriff. I think there's an Asian mental health expert, a doctor. It's a very diverse team of five. And the challenge that I understood the principal, Cal Kaminoff, to pick up was that although they are not averse to building jails or to remodeling jails, the absolute first thing they're interested in doing is wringing every possible thing out of alternatives and handling ways to speed up court appearances or just anything that can apply that would make it easier for us to reduce our jail population. And that was what he saw as the challenge, and that's what enticed them to apply. My version of the other firm in Rochester is, as I said, it's an old, old organization. They don't specialize in jails particularly. Well, they do all kinds of governmental planning and research. But their principal has, I guess, been there for 6 years, and the two other members of the team are younger than that. And although they appeared on camera, they didn't really contribute to the presentation. It was the principal who presented, really. So I see us losing an opportunity to get the very best advice we could get and not having to go to a firm which, as one member of the committee said while I was observing it, we're going to have to teach them what we want them to do. And that, to me, is not what we need to be doing with consultants. So thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. In the opinion of the chair, that's not a brief remark.
It was a good one, though.
It was briefer than reading what I wrote.
Sure.
So I'm still trying to understand, and maybe I can ask in a different way, what we might expect to get for $63,000. It's what we'll get back from this, like a list. Here's how many beds you need. Here's if you do program AX, it'll cost this much money, and you can keep this many people out of the jail. But if you do program Y, it'll cost this much money, and here's how many future inmates, you know,
reduction nights
we might be able to save, or you start this new program, and here's what how you ramp it up.
Mike,
this program you're already doing it, but expand this one. Is that what we're going to get?
Yes, to some extent, yes.
Okay, and
they're going to evaluate our existing programs and say, if you make these changes, these efficiency measures, these are the increased savings that you could expect. Here's the cost associated with this. They're going to look at our existing programs to evaluate them so that we can figure out where we want to prioritize, what's effective, what isn't effective, and then evaluate new programs that we might want to add to our mix of tools in our arsenal, as it were, and the impact that we might expect and the cost that it would be for that impact. Those are the things that, and Rich, do you want to add to that?
And then look at factors outside of our own county, like the trend is that drug dealers are moving up from...
No, they're going to look at the patterns in Tompkins County. Okay. What is our population?
State law changes, okay. Things like that.
One at a time.
Okay. So it's that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, is what's, you know, in the RFP and what, you know, and how we can make sure that questions that the community might have as we go to use this information after we get it will have been, that we're sure that they will have been all answered.
One of the things that they did talk about is trying to have a comprehensive, I mean, I understand it's $63,000, so we'll see what that means. But it's not just at the jail population. They talked about looking at the court systems, all aspects of coming into the reentry programs that we have, how effective they are. So just think comprehensively. That's what we have asked from them, and that's what we'll expect from them, and that's what Rich will hold them to, as you know, and all of us will hold them to moving forward, is that we have a sense of where they're coming from in the community, why, what the court systems are, what opportunities they are, what expansions there could be in that system, the impact on the staff, what staff needs there are within the jail. All those components are going to be looked at as well.
Okay, and then who are our primary staff who are going to be,
let's move on to Rich.
The principal public safety officers in the county, being probation, the jail, the sheriff's office, they'll all be involved, certainly. And because of, as I think you mentioned earlier, we'll be bringing in expertise on from probably CARS and the Drug and Alcohol Council of Tompkins County to get their input. Mental health, it's obviously a very broad problem that we're dealing with, so we're going to try to get a broad view of it. I just had a couple other things to mention. One is how the committee treated the issue of cost. The two proposals are really very close, relatively, in cost. Given the importance of the decision, it was the consensus of the committee that was not a factor. They were close enough that really we just wanted to try to pick who we thought could do the best job for Tompkins County. The other point I just wanted to make is that we're not operating in a vacuum. New York State is looking at what we're doing. We are currently operating with a variance that runs through the end of the year. And it's my opinion what New York State is looking for is that we are treating this seriously and we're making progress. And for that reason, I'd urge us to make progress tonight. I think we need to get the decision done and keep moving. Thanks.
Martha?
Yeah, specifically, Ray has to put a package in, tomorrow, Captain Bunce? To tell the commission to show what progress we've made since August, and that's what they're going to look at when they decide on the next extension. I just want to say I want the public to understand that the firm that we're picking or that is proposed here is top quality, and I could not say in honesty that of the other firm. In terms of the commission, they certainly know CGR. I would be very confident that they'll be confident in CGR's work. And they were very prepared. They had a whole PowerPoint that showed, that what they were going to do and what they had done already in other places. They knew what we had done. They, they'd really looked hard at our stuff. The California guy, Kalinoff, didn't have any hadn't prepared at all. And in fact, the reason he said, and this may sound trivial, but he made a point of saying that his other staff weren't there because of the schedule change that we had made at the last minute. And we hadn't made a schedule change. This had been booked, a while before. So my ear kind of went, huh? Especially given these reports I heard of the turmoil that followed his consultancies. I thought there's something a little off here, and I want people to be confident that we're picking a firm that has a great reputation, that these individuals have a lot of experience in this area, and I think we're going to be getting really good value for our money.
Okay, on Resolution M, we're going to go to a vote. Everyone's had one or two chances. Mike, you haven't spoken. That's true.
Just a quick question. I'm just wondering, and I should know this, I'm sorry. Have we laid out the idea that, I'm counting seven people here who I don't think would accept the fact of any kind of jail expansion. Are we laying that out as a premise for whoever gets this, like, listen, a jail expansion just isn't in the cards. What do we have to do to not do that, I guess?
My charge to the jail study committee was to enter into this process with an open mind, that we have to look at we have to look at it from other angles. And certainly, I don't think there's anybody on the jail study committee who wants to say, okay, let's just build a much bigger jail and add beds. At the same time, we're currently double bunking. We are boarding out, on average, maybe around 10 people at any one time. And one of the goals is to make our jail better. Obviously, we don't want people in the jail who shouldn't be there, but for the people who are in the Tompkins County Jail, we should be exercising best practices. And one possibility out of that is that we do invest money in our jail, whether it's in beds, possibly, but certainly in being able to provide a better spectrum of services to the people who are there with the hope that they're not going to come back. So I don't think anybody on this jail study committee is going in with preconceptions about we have to do one thing or another. Hopefully we can bring to the whole legislature a proposal that really makes sense, that makes it better. But that's the goal.
On Resolution M, the resolution to expend the money for the and execute the agreement, with the Center for Governmental Research, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have three opposed.
And Ms. Chair Lane?
Yes.
I would like to point out, because you didn't call me on me again after Martha spoke again, that the way what you find online in newspapers are the articles that deal with controversy. What I understood from the California principal's application was they get called into places where there are great controversies raging, and they get called in to try to bring parties together and handle them. And Mr. Kalmanoff himself does serve as a courtmaster often in settling disputes. So I think that it's misleading to say if you go online, you'll see that turmoil follows him or them. On the contrary, they're brought into places where there are problems.
We can go on talking about this, and somebody will pick a scab, and somebody else will need to jump in to respond to it. But I really think we need to move on to other business tonight.
I'd like to ask something to be in the minutes. So I just like the minutes to reflect that my vote, that I voted against this solely because I didn't think we'd engaged in enough process that the public had asked us to engage in, asking all stakeholders to come and reflect on what ought to be in the RFP. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's move on to reports. For my report, I wanted to talk just for a minute about the fact that yesterday morning I received an email with an invitation. It was a confidential email to a presentation at noon, or 12:30, I guess it was, up at Cornell at the Statler. And as you all know from the news reports, they have now picked the 14th president of Cornell University. Her name is Martha Pollack. She's the provost at the University of Michigan. And she spoke briefly. We heard from the chair of the board, Mr. Harrison, their board of trustees. We heard from interim president Hunter Rawlings and from Jan Zubrow, who chaired the committee for the search. We were told they started out with 300 applicants, and they had been working since spring to narrow that down, and they were pretty confident the person that they have is the right person, received a unanimous vote in their rather large board of trustees. I assume she's doctor. Dr. Pollack, Martha Pollack, did spend some time going around the table, so did have a chance to just exchange pleasantries, but did say we'd really like to talk with you at length more, and she said she was looking forward to it. So I wanted to report that to the group. Let's go to Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
Thanks, Mike. Just a couple of things. Beginning with TCOG, we talked last time about TCOG setting up a new task force to look at emergency medical services. I just wanted to let you know that they've had their first meeting. They met last week. Ambitious group. They want to identify what the specific problems are within the emergency medical system. Obviously, beginning with kind of a shortage, not kind of, a shortage of volunteers, and then working over the course of the year to find solutions to those problems. We're well represented on that group, even though it has kind of a rural composition to it. We have Dan Klein, Lisa Holmes, Marsha Lynch, Lee Shurtleff, and Brian Wilbur, all of whom are members of that committee. So it's off to a good start. They'll meet every other week for the next year to take on this task. Different topic. You just heard that the request for the variance, GL variance, will go in tomorrow. It needs to be in 45 days in advance of the lapse of the variance. Ray will be asking for a one-year extension of the variance. We always ask for one-year extension of the variance. Hopefully they'll be generous, and they being the Commission on Corrections, generous in terms of what they give us. In addition to what you've approved tonight with the study, that's an important cornerstone of the request for the variance. It's also good that you've taken several steps as a part of the 2017 budget to do other things, and we will include that in the package. So presuming that you approve the budget, the allocation to the Upstate College Initiative is going to be featured in that, as will the commitment to transitional housing and the multi-year nature of that commitment, the fact that we have renewed the reentry program for a second year. All of those things will be a part of the variance submission, and I think will help us make the case to the state that we deserve to have that variance extended. Again, we'd like to have it for a year. We'll see. The last item on my report is an update, but it's also kind of laying ground for a conversation that we'll need to have in the coming days. The jail study is not the only study that we have out there. With consultants responding to requests for proposals that we've issued, the second one is the law enforcement shared services study. It used to be called the police consolidation study. An RFP was issued for that. We received responses. Unfortunately, only two responses. That seems to be, that was the case for the jail as well. So two responses were received. From that process, there was a review of both responses, and there were interviews of both the parties, both our New York State firms. A clear preference has emerged from that process. One was head and shoulders above the other, both in terms of the written presentation, but also really nailed it in the presentation here, the verbal presentation, particularly in the element of public participation, which we've heard very clearly is an important part of this shared services study. They brought in a sub-consultant who specializes in public participation. It's a very important and strong part of the proposal. So with that, the steering committee that's been assembled for this has selected a preferred vendor, which I won't name tonight, but we have an issue with cost. The state has awarded us $50,000 to do this study. You may recall that we wanted more than that when we first began. So it's a $50,000 state grant. The fee proposal is slightly over $70,000. So we have an excess of what the state will support. So in the coming days, we will, in fact, today I've asked the state to consider a higher grant amount. We'll see. It's a very rigid state program. Unlike many others, the rules are just very difficult. But we've asked, and we'll see where that goes. We will talk to the vendors about reducing their price and see where that goes. But it could be when that's done, there's still a gap. So it's a discussion that we'll need to have. I'll bring it to public safety this week so we can talk about it in detail. But I just want you to know that, again, we think we have a good vendor, made a strong proposal. We have a gap in state money versus what the cost of this will probably end up being. So more on that at public safety.
Do we have a sense of how much of a gap right now?
Yeah, so it's right now. So the specific proposal was 74. The grant was 50.
Let's try to raise our hands to be recognized.
So that's the gap.
Martha?
I assume when Captain Muntz puts the package back to the previous discussion, puts the package together, that'll be he'll add in that the additional corrections officer as
I'm
well.
I'm sorry, and that was in my notes.
Okay.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Okay.
That'll be in there.
Now on the on the consolidation study, that's not our decision, right? That's like that you've got a committee, as you said, of with the city and who else
that's
is
right.
Remind
it's
us who
right.
else is involved.
There's six from the county, six from the city, and two from the villages. One a police officer, or the other a village official.
Okay.
So that's, again, unanimous consensus behind a specific vendor. So now the issue is, what do we do about this gap between grants and fees?
Okay. Joe, are you through your report?
That is my report.
All right. Anna?
Just a quick question. Who are the six county?
The six county, Jim Dennis, Peter Stein, Glenn Morey, myself, Paula Younger, Brian Robinson.
Any other questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe. Jonathan Wood is our county attorney.
The only report I have is I just want to let people know at the last board meeting, the legislature authorized the county administrator to enter into a settlement with OMIG. That's been completed and done, so that process is over.
Hold your applause, please.
And that's my report.
Any other questions for Jonathan?
Now can we applaud?
Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
Mike, I have no report for this evening. Thank you.
Questions for Rick?
Why don't you have a report?
Okay, let's go down to the committee reports. Starts the Transportation Committee, and my report is I have no report because we did not meet this month. We will be meeting in December and probably taking a look at the transportation, particularly Cortland to Tompkins, the transportation corridor. Been asked to look at that from the planning department. Any questions I can answer? Let's go to government operations for your report, Dan.
Government operations committee last met on November 2nd. There were two items that we voted on which will appear on the legislature's next agenda. Those two items are the social media policy for the county and also legislative salaries, which is always an interesting topic. So there is a resolution that we passed that you will be seeing soon if you haven't seen it already. Marcia did send out a press release about it, so all the information is contained in there. Our next meeting is December 7th, and one of the topics we'll be continuing is the discussion of the credit card acceptance by the county for payment of taxes and other fees. And that's my report.
Questions for Dan? Peter?
I have no idea we have a social...
Use your microphone, please.
I'm sorry. I have no idea we have a social media policy. What does that mean?
That's because we don't have it yet. It is a new proposed policy. And what it is guidelines for the departments. If they're going to give out information via social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, what the guidelines are around that.
Okay, thank you. I thought it was what we could watch.
Let's go to Martha Robertson, who chairs Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee.
Thank you, Mike. We will meet tomorrow. And you have a little bit of reading to do, so I'm just kind of heads up. What you've got includes a great report from Fernando de Aragon, the electric vehicle infrastructure plan update. So that should be really interesting. We will also be talking about the Avangrid, that is NYSEG Energy Smart Community. We'll get a report from Katie Borghella, which will be a really important initiative that's getting off the ground. And with our utility And there will be a discussion of, there is a resolution urging the U.S. Congress to pass a carbon fee and dividend. And this was brought to us by the Citizens Climate Lobby, and the Planning Department has put this together. So I'm not even sure whether the citizens, whether the advocates are going to be there, since it appears they have convinced the, I don't know if they needed a lot of convincing, but the planning staff is advocating that we do this. So talk about throwing spaghetti at the wall these days, but, I think it's needed more than ever. So if you're interested, come on. Tomorrow at 3.
Questions for Martha. Anna.
Just a quick comment to point out that the that this has been moving through at the national level as well, and there is it was intentionally written the way it is so that it is revenue neutral and that there is bipartisan support. Tom Reed signed on, for example, to that initial to the initial evaluation letter of that and is looking for our support at the local level as a potential as one of the initial pieces. So I just want to point out that that is their intention, at least, to have there be bipartisan support of this, and I appreciated that.
And if I can just say I went to a Government Affairs Committee meeting of the Chamber of Commerce, was it last Monday, and they presented on this, and it was a pretty in-depth discussion. I don't think we'll have that kind of time tomorrow, but it's really important, and there's a big part of it is how to offset expected increases in cost of items, offset that by revenue coming back to families. I'm sorry, the issue about Tom Reed, I think he just wants to make sure that none of all y'all's ever run against him. So that's why he might hope we support it. Well, we passed a similar resolution a few years ago, and he threw it up in my face. So.
Well, I'd love to see some unanimity on this one.
All right. Anything else? Any other questions for Martha? Let's go to Charter Review Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Thank you. We received a communication. Frank Krupa made us aware of the fact that at the Community Mental Health Services Board meeting Monday a week ago, I guess, they were reading through the entire relevant article of our charter and came across language which the Charter Review Committee had adopted back in February of 2014 when Sue Romanchuk was still the mental health rep to our committee. And they think that we made an error in what we did and that we should go back to adopting the language of the state law. What my recollection is of what we did, and I checked the meeting minutes later, is that we read the state law language and saw what I view as an unfortunate phrase. They used the word special education, and we have been sensitized to believe that that's no longer a good term to use. And so we changed it to specialized education. No intention was made to change the state law, just to get away from some unfortunate language. And so when the Community Mental Health Services Board read what we had done a couple of years earlier with the charter, and it's in what has been recommended to you, they said they think we shouldn't have done that and we should go back to the original state language. So an attempt was made to contact the other members of the Charter Committee, but and by Kathy Covert, and she did not hear back from all members. So I had hoped to have a unified reaction to this from the committee, but I don't. So I'm giving you my reaction and my understanding, which is that we did not try to change the state law. We did not think we had changed the state law. We tried to get away from some unfortunate language that we saw in the state law. and make it more acceptable and clearer. So it is my opinion that we can easily go back to the state law without requiring another public hearing on the charter. Our county attorney was not available until this evening to get his opinion on this subject. He thinks it's a substantive change. I disagree with him. I hope you will ignore his opinion tonight. So, if our charter committee had met, I assume that we would be agreeing with what the Mental Health Services Board said, and we would go back to the less than felicitous and less than clear state version.
I think we need to go to Jonathan after that comment and let him speak to this and his recommendation.
Well, today's the first I've heard of it, and as far as I know, there's yet to be a change, so it's hard to really give a definite opinion. From what I saw from the email I had, which I believe came from Frank, they believe that there was a substantive change, that the language, and from what I understood from Dooley, she did not believe the change was substantive. I, frankly, having seen at this meeting for the first time what their proposed changes are, a little confused by it, to be honest. So I'd really have to look at it. But at the moment, the committee hasn't made any change yet. So it's sort of a theoretical question.
Basically, I think that the local law is out in front of this full legislature at this point. And so this legislature can make a change, and then you can... Do you want to see if someone wants to move a change and then react to it?
Sure.
Well, Will.
I would actually prefer that we not attempt to do this tonight, that we, in fact, have the committee meeting that Julie tried to get, that we invite members of the representative of the Community Mental Services Board to meet with the committee and explain their thinking on that particular issue. It wasn't huge, but it wasn't insignificant. I just happened to be at that meeting, and as they were going through the language, they really, really felt we needed to do that. So I think that would be a better process, quite frankly, than us trying to glean what this means.
Jonathan.
And not to disagree with that, Frank Krupa is here to explain it. I mean, to be honest, what I got in the email, and as Julie describes it, are somewhat different. So, I think people have different views of what the changes are.
Let's hear from Frank Krupa.
Sure, and I'll try to be brief. We reviewed the charter language for other reasons, and as we were going through it, we discovered that a proposed change that was put forward in two areas, it wasn't just the specialized education, there was another one. In both those instances, we believed what were attempts to clarify the language or improve grammatical correctness change the intent of the language. And so what the board is asking is that the language as it existed in the charter remain the same, which would be a change from what was recommended here from the charter committee. So that's the process. We're asking to keep the language the same as it was in the original charter, but what's in front of you is proposed changes from the charter committee.
That is correct. And since the Charter Committee did not intend, in my recollection, to change state law, just to clarify it and get rid of an unfortunate term, I don't think the committee should have any difficulty returning to the state language without it being a substantive change. But the committee hasn't been able to meet.
Martha?
So this document we got on our desks is what? This is from the Mental Health Services Board?
It's a summary of their discussion that I submitted and was adjusted by whoever put the actual document together.
What we're talking about tonight is the bottom part of that page dealing with 1602J and L.
All right, so the issue is whether your committee can have another meeting before the next legislature meeting and bring something back that is agreed, and whether that needs to be have another meeting, another hearing.
Let me just say that when we made the change, which is part of the local law, I think Dooley's right that we said we'd made it for reasons of being sensitive to the terminology. But it was a change, and now we seem to be are being told that that change at the time we made it was substantive vis-a-vis the state law. But it is what we have proposed. So now if we go back to the old language, now we're making a change. And I think Jonathan is saying, because it's a change from the local law that was presented, that it is substantive. Am I right?
Essentially, I mean, the difference between a substantive change and a merely grammatical change, I mean, it sounds from what I that it's at least somewhat substantive. Certainly, certain members of the public certainly feel that it's substantive. And for that reason, I think it would make sense to have, you know, in the event that we did make that change, it seems to me it would make sense to have another public hearing because it's at least arguably substantive. I mean, it's certainly not just a grammatical change.
Well, we certainly can have another public hearing. It's not as though we wait another 2 weeks that everything's going to collapse on us. I know the Charter Committee would really like to have this done with.
But like I said, at the moment, there hasn't been any change in which, you know, other than either
well,
the committee would
so
do it.
So it's either got to go back to, if we want to make the change, it's either got to go back to committee or it's got to be moved as an amendment to the local law that we're looking at. That's the way I would see it.
Right.
I agree with you, except that if it went back to the committee and the committee recognized that 1602 J and L was not ever meant to be a substantive change and wasn't a substantive change, it could go back without requiring another public hearing. And that's where Jonathan and
I agree with you, except that even though we didn't think it was a substantive change, we are being told by people who have the expertise in it that it is a substantive change. And not only Jonathan, but by the department.
There's nothing on the floor. Can this just go back to committee?
Yeah. Let's go to Rich, and then let's go to Carol.
Point of information. Can we proceed with the charter as it's presently, charter amendments as they're presently amended, and then consider this with the Mental Health Services Board and make a further change to the charter later? So we wouldn't stop the train?
Yes, you could do that. But I would think that we ought to just not have to go through a second local law and a second public hearing
okay.
for that. Carol?
So I just want to point out that we would spend less time having another public hearing, given how many people we had come out tonight, than we have spent debating this. So I
don't likely see, right.
Plus, I have a few other little things that I am, as I go through this document and review pieces of it at a time, and in response to tonight's comment that we got, that I have questions about that maybe make it worth it to in fact, do that. One that got raised tonight was the Mental Health Services Board asking to have parity with the health services, the Board of Health to have parity with the Mental Health Services Board to have parity with the Board of Health so that the process would be the same in terms of having input to the selection of the commissioner, which I think is a reasonable request. It might allay the fears that are out there about what, you know, whether it would impact their equality. Two was the question that came up about the airport tonight. You know, Martha pointed out after I asked and after the conversation had moved on that it is in our charter, with no changes proposed, that the airport is an enterprise activity. But I look and see that there's no definition under definitions of what that means, of what an enterprise activity is. So it's possible that what we should have in here, if we're going to use the terminology like we do everywhere else, we use terminology that really means something. If we want it to mean something, there should maybe be a definition. An enterprise activity is expected to, you know, make their own budget work, except when they have special requests to us, in which, and we will take those, one, you know, individually. Something like that. Do you want to answer these one at a time? Because I've got one or two other little things that might make a difference. So how do you want to? Do you want me to finish my list? Okay, so one is mental health. I think it's like two words difference, but they, on the mental health board where wording was proposed to be taken out, this would be just one quick definition on enterprise. And the third was I noticed that the definition of a capital project, which is section C-1.0.4D, a capital project shall mean any of the following when first acquired or constructed. So as I read this, we actually, according to our definition, shouldn't really be using the capital fund for, like, the deferred maintenance kind of catch-up. You know, there are places we have in the capital budget, things that we didn't used to put in the capital budget. So it may mean that we need to either stop doing that or be clearer about our definition of capital project. And then the fourth little thing that I had was that right now our also has to do with the capital budget. Right, we used to, until about two or maybe three years ago, but the whole first, you know, more than half of the time that I was on the legislature, during the expanded budget committee, we got a whole long presentation earlier in the process, and it was a longer about the capital budget, so that we all understood what the capital budget was, what was going to be in there. We talked about it at greater length. And the last couple of years, it's been done in the more individual budget committee meetings, and that they still have, and done really just in the last few minutes of our lengthy presentations.
That's not accurate. So just not accurate.
Wait to be recognized.
So if you look at the schedule, it's been at the end and it's been pretty short. And that we make that a kind of a done deal in here under the budget section, that whole new section, longer section that replaces what we had before. It's just something we might want to think about. I think Section A there says that except that the capital program shall be reviewed and recommended by the program committee so charged. So that's a change to how we did it when I first got here, and it just might be something we might want to be aware of, and I would prefer to see us continue to have the lengthier presentations to all of us because we all have to be conversant in it.
Jim Dennis?
Yep. Is there a resolution on the floor? Did I miss it?
No, but
it's not a resolution.
Excuse me, Carol.
There's not a resolution on the floor. There is a local law, which we have now held a public hearing on.
We have, and
that was scheduled.
Well, it sounds like we're going through changes of the local law right here without the benefit of ever going to a committee again, and it's almost like bizarre. So, you know, I think you either send it back to the committee or do what we need to do here.
Can I just respond to that? Because I heard that the committee may need to meet again. between now and when this comes to us. So since I had these fairly minor things, I think.
Please don't talk to me. I'm not on.
It made sense to get them out.
It's up to this group.
If we're going to go through another public hearing, we should have gotten this out.
Let me get Peter.
Under committee report. So.
Yeah, I want to underscore what Jim just said. I think that this is a very complicated thing. It's hard to understand. I've spent a lot of time trying to figure it out, and I think we ought to do it at the committee, not here at the on the floor at this hour of night. So I would like to refer this back to the committee.
A motion to refer back to committee, seconded by Rich John. Discussion on the motion. Anna?
Yes, please.
Ready to vote on the motion to refer back to committee. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? Opposed. The motion, the local law is referred back to committee. Dan Klein.
Chair, now that charter committee has finally got your attention after 3 years, I just want to put one little idea out there because it's something you'll need to chew on a little bit before this comes to a vote again. The idea that the speaker said today that the mental health advisory committee wants to be on parity with the Board of Health in terms of how directors are chosen. I just want to make it clear that what the Mental Health Services Board, is that the right name?
Sure.
Mental Health Services Board, the way it's recommended in the charter now, is the same as every other department head in the entire county, with the exception of the health department. So when you use the word parity, just realize that if it's parity with one, it's not parity with the other. So if you don't understand what that means, talk to me in between the meetings. But I just want to make clear that it's a little more complex than is being, okay, you might just think offhand.
We're done talking about this, referring it back to committee. Martha?
Well, a question that some of our boards are just decided by, you know, designed and developed and approved by us. The Board of Health, there's a lot of state law, right?
That's the only one.
You think that's why that stands out?
Yes.
Yeah, we had proposed both of them to be changed, and then we found out we couldn't change.
You wanted to change it back to the way the other departments are?
To the two under the
joint change the Board of Health that way, too. They were all be the same. That was what we were talking about doing. Well,
so Dan's made a perfectly reasonable point, but I think it's still, in this particular case, worth giving serious thought to the fact that we have an unusual situation, essentially an experiment trying to do the merger. And my hope is that the committee will take another look at this, consider the comments tonight, and perhaps consider what it would effectively be an interim revision that could be changed at some point if we decide to make that permanent.
Carol, would you please plan to send a memo of some kind to Dooley and for the rest of the committee as to the changes you just talked about you'd like to be looked at, and anyone else that has any other changes, send them to Dooley so they can get on the agenda for the charter committee and be disposed of in one way or the other.
Would an email do?
Well, yeah, I think an email would do.
Yeah. Dooley? Well, I'm concerned about trying to set a committee meeting.
Well, we aren't going to set it during this meeting. We got too much else to do.
I would like committee members to not leave this meeting until we set a date for that charter committee meeting.
All right, Peter, Dan? And,
yep, happy.
Peter in particular.
Okay.
Don't leave until we set this meeting date.
All right. Let's go on.
And I have one other question, which I will raise for our clerk, Kathy Covert. If we're going to make any changes, we have to set another public hearing, I think.
Yep.
So should we try to do that tonight?
Well, I don't think you have a final law to present to the public at this point to set another hearing.
Because it's going to change, you'd say.
It has to be on our desks a certain period of time before the public hearing.
No, that's for adoption.
Okay. This is going to go on.
Okay, let's move on. I want to go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Yeah.
Let me see here. I've been away from this a long time. Oh.
You've got one resolution that we haven't done, Resolution K.
Two.
Oh, there's another one?
Project L, K
and L. I'm sorry, K and L.
Yeah, all right. K, just to start it off, this is as adopted by the committee with changes by Dooley Kiefer, and it's an authorization to enter into a contract with the City of Ithaca and to appropriate funds from the contingent fund for a study of Stewart Park governance models. And we added the words in the first whereas, throughout the county and region, and then in the third whereas, in the third line, 2016 City Master Plan word study was added. And I would move this resolution.
It's our second, seconded by Dave. Discussion. Martha.
I've been part of a lot of conversations about this, and I'm all in favor of intermunicipal cooperation. However, I am not going to support this. I really think we have a lot on our hands, and I really don't want to go down the road of considering taking on Stewart Park. And I just, you know, we weren't part of choosing that the firm that we're being asked to pay for, to split the cost for. You know, if we start saying, well, city residents use this and county residents use that, and we could spend the rest of our term and the next term duking that out. I would much rather spend money and split the delta on the consolidation study. You know, share that we put 10,000 in, the city puts 10,000 in. That's the kind of shared services I'm interested in. I'm not interested in doing this, so I'm going to vote against it.
Anna,
I'm definitely voting for this. Like the distribution of the people that use Stewart Park is absolutely more represented by the county than the city. The county's ability to support what needs to happen at Stewart Park, we have the most incredible potential. If you could just see the vision that it could be and what it has not had the ability to become, I think that it's sad. And the fact that we could be potentially part of that, even just evaluate whether or not we could be a part of that, I think is worth it. It's a very small investment to support the study and ask those questions. So I really, at this point, don't see the harm in asking the questions. And I would just ask that everybody consider the usage of it, and that it could be a tremendous tourist draw for us in a way that it currently isn't, and the economic impact that that could be, even that it's a concert center. Those are some of the things that they're looking at. So don't just look at it as something that is pretty and superficial. There is some real economic draw here that we are not able to capitalize on right now, and I think that we need to consider that as well.
Jim, there was a revised version by Dooley. Is that the one that you've moved with a
couple? It is.
All right, thank you. Dooley?
Yeah, I have a question about the dollar amount, the $17,000. I'm not sure where that came from. I did get and looked at today the project proposal and the fee proposal, task for governance and funding plan for Stewart Park. I'm not sure which of these dollar figures add up to $17,000. I hope someone could explain that to me.
Joe?
It's task four, is that right?
Yeah, it's task four. So it's the 22,080 And then we deducted out the cost of Cass Park, at least most of that.
So why isn't it half of the others, and why is it all of them?
It's at least my sense that that those costs probably aren't going to float with whether it's one of those parks or both those parks. The financial plan is going to take a certain amount of effort and time, as will the funding strategies. So the only thing that I pulled out of there is the element directly tied to Cass Park.
Well, it strikes me that you were overly generous in doing that. I'm interested in the governance study and the financial analysis. I'm certainly not interested in it for Cass Park, and I would cut the others in half. So is this a figure that can be changed at this point, or have you negotiated something with the city?
I have not negotiated this with the city. I do think it'll leave us short. Again, it's my expectation the consultants will need a certain amount of time and effort to do B and C on this. That won't change if Cass is excluded.
Okay, we're ready to vote on this one, Carol?
I just wanted to point out those first few whereases there in the resolution, where basically the city asked us, would we just support one of the few places in the county the public has access to the lake, and we said no, but we might, not unless we do a study. And consider alternative governing models. So we've asked for that. One of the selling points for me and that firm that we're hiring from Rochester, the top study, the top activity that they cite on their website is that they helped the city and the borough of Princeton, New Jersey, the city and the borough, which is the county, the equivalent to counties in New York State, to consolidate. Maybe we can hire them. What?
It's not equivalent.
All right,
if we like their results, maybe we get the way they work with us, maybe we can get them to talk to us about how to feel like we're moving forward with greater intermunicipal cooperation here. When I was on the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, which was predated my time on the legislature, and we studied what visitors to this region said, was that the very top frustrating thing that we haven't been able to address is greater access to the lake. And boy, would I hate to see a gate get put across Stewart Park, and we're going to charge people to come in if they don't live in the city. That would be horrible. I hope that in my lifetime, among the other things I'd like to see in my lifetime, would be the ability to sit in Stewart Park and have a glass of wine. At a restaurant overlooking the lake. There's so much we could do. Let's at least study it.
We've got Martha, then Mike, then I'm going to vote. Martha?
Yeah, I've opposed this before. This is not new. I mean, I know the answer to the study already, that it's going to be a great idea and a great investment for us to do it. From people who don't have any idea how much the jail costs, how much Medicaid costs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how much housing we aren't doing. So it's a matter of trade-offs. So,
Mike?
I voted this out of committee, and I mean, I'm glad that I did that because I got to hear everybody else here. I'm not going to vote for this now. Martha's made some good points. I know Glenn's not going to vote for it, so in the spirit of bipartisanship, I think that's good. I think you're right. I think the study's just going to say what we already know. I mean, sometimes you have to accept that a park is a park. And I don't know. I mean, I like it the way it is. I don't really want people going in and changing it. I see who uses the park. I think that it's great that they're able to use it. And if you start fiddling with it too much, I think those people don't get to use it anymore as much as they use it now. So, thank you.
Okay, we've got a short-form roll call vote.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Keeper?
No, I wanted to say something else.
Proceed with a full roll call, then, please.
That was a no, because
Because I...
You didn't get to talk.
Can I explain why I voted no? I looked at the figures. I consulted with our county administrator. The total dollars for task four was $22,080. If you subtract Cass Park from that $6,000, you get $16,080. And our county administrator rounded it up to $17,000, which seemed funny to me. But at the very least, the resolution should say not to exceed, and it doesn't.
Wait, would you?
You've interrupted the roll call, Dooley. But
yes, so but I will. I will be voting no. I'll be voting no because
with those changes, would you vote for it? 16,080 instead of 17.
All right, we're going to proceed with the roll call.
Wait. Mrs. McBean Claiborne.
Wait, can I move to
no
point of order?
No. No. We're on a roll call vote. At the end of that, I'll take your point of order.
Well, no, a point of order, first of all, point of order takes precedence.
Not in the middle of a roll call.
Well, the point of order is that we proceeded to a roll call before people who raised their hands to speak had been recognized. That's a point of order that needs to be resolved.
Please go ahead.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne.
Well, I don't know what I'm voting on anymore. Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
10 ayes, 4 noes.
That passes. Carol, do you want to make a point?
Or
do you want to?
Yes. Well, yes. No. I mean, regardless of the outcome, if somebody had asked to be recognized and there was some minor thing we could have taken care of that,
asked to be recognized before we began the roll call.
Well,
she had her hand up.
Well, I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
And then if somebody raises a point of order, according to our rules, we'd stop and at least consider the question that's been raised about the point of order. That's in here. That's in our rules. So I protest that we, and I ask that we review this rules of the legislature for future discussion.
I just want to point out that this legislature at any time can challenge the ruling of a chair. Martha Robertson.
Could I ask Kathy to include a summary of my reasoning for why I voted no? Thanks.
All right. Now let's talk about another fun one here. Jim Dennis, will you move Resolution L?
I will. This is only $171 million. This shouldn't take long at all. The adoption of the 2017 Tompkins County budget and 2017-2021 Tompkins County capital program, and I would move that.
Seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion. Jim?
Let me just mention a few points about this 2017 budget. This budget includes a half-time librarian, OAR. We're going to assist OAR to assist individuals having gone through the criminal justice system and come out the other side to pursue college opportunities. We are providing for energy navigators 3 years, $50,000 a year. We are providing a natural infrastructure program that we will be able to investigate severe natural events that happen over time in the county. We have a deputy to help us implement the body cam program that we'll be doing. We have a living wage for COFA. We have a targeted housing strategy. We have child development efforts. We have the Human Service Coalition Transitional Housing, 50K, look a year looking forward. We have, all the while this was going on, attempting to keep the levy on or near what the county administrator's budget was back in September, a 3% budget that he gave to us. We've had 10 meetings. We've had 6 department head meetings. We've had 3 voting meetings. We've had 1 budget forum. And here we are. We are here with, you look at the numbers in the resolution, and the only thing I would change in the resolution where it says approximately $15.64, a breaking news, it is $15.65 in our budget. So all of those things that I mentioned prior to this, you were able to do within the framework of the county administrator's budget at this point. So I leave it up to you to provide the 2017 budget for the residents of Tompkins County.
Discussion. Arthur Robertson.
I had talked to a few people, and I had asked Kevin for information on how much it would cost to add another corrections officer, and I knew it was in our book, but I kind of wanted to have it in front of people. And then how much would it, if we took the equivalent amount out of the overtime budget, could we then sort of knock the levy back down, et cetera? I have talked to undersheriff and I haven't had a chance to talk to Captain Bunce, but I'm not going to go ahead and make that motion now. We've got the jail study going on and a lot of moving parts. I think they're going to see how it goes with adding the one CO and try to improve the situation there that way, and just kind of hold off for now. So I just want to let you know that I'm not making a motion now and why.
Thank you. Other comments? Dooley Kiefer.
I wanted to recommend a couple of language changes for clarity. I cannot at this point remember whether everyone has a copy of what I suggested or not. It doesn't look like they do. You do? Okay.
We do have it, Kathy says.
One was in the next to the last resolve to make it clear that the median priced home assessment of $175,000 is the amount in 2016, so add in 2016. And the other one is in the resolve just above that, in which there are various percentages included. And in the interest of making it clearer to our residents, not for ourselves, to say an approximate tax rate of $662 per thousand of assessed value, which amounts to a rate decrease of approximately 1.53%. So those were my suggested changes. I don't know if they're friendly or not.
Jim, are those friendly?
They are.
Is it to the seconder?
Yes.
All right, there. Then we'll have those changes in the resolution adopting the budget.
So I thank you for that, but I must say that I've been wrestling with myself about this budget, and I am so uncomfortable with the fact that we raised our sales tax estimates. We did it by a majority vote. I think it is a great mistake to have done that, especially with our future economy as unsettled as it feels to me, that I can't vote for the budget now. So I will not vote for it tonight.
Are we ready to vote?
I would like that explanation in the minutes.
Are we ready to vote? Let's have a roll call.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Is there anyone who wishes to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 1 no.
The budget is adopted.
Thank you.
I think you're...
May I make one further comment? I want to thank certainly the county administrator and Kevin McGuire for all the work they've done on this, starting in the summer and, you know, culminating this evening in this vote. And to all of you who showed up at the 6 meetings, listened to all the department heads, showed up at the voting meetings, and the forum, you know, I appreciate your effort very much as the committee chair, and I know the people that you represent appreciate the effort that you put into, you know, trying to put every budget together and reflecting what your constituents think. So I appreciate the work of all of you.
Joe Mariana.
Yeah, if I can just say a couple of words at the end of this very long process. This is almost a 9-month process. So if you accept that as the equivalent of a pregnancy, there are times when
we
it feels
delivered.
Like it. It begins in March. It begins in March when we start to do projections that lead to your April retreat, which leads to the departments digging in and developing budgets that fit within those targets and figuring out what's so important that they need to ask for an over-target request, to coming to our office where we try to grind something out as quickly as we can that not only is a logical budget but gives you the information you need to make decisions, to all the work that you do in this committee. It's a really remarkable process that seems to work. So we've delivered a beautiful baby, I think, with a couple of awards maybe. I do want to make sure that we recognize Kevin McGuire has done a tremendous job this year, both in developing this budget, but remember, this is a whole new budgeting system. And our credo was never let him see a sweat, but there were some moments when we wore you know, extra clothing so you couldn't see the marks on our shirts, because it was coming together just as we were delivering things. We were proud of the way it went until I think the first minute of the first meeting when Martha discovered an error in the system that was okay, because through this year we worked out a number of bugs, and in the coming years it's going to be a much better system than before. But credit Kevin McGuire for a tremendous effort in putting that budget together and being an architect of the new budgeting system. Credit also not only department heads who work hard on these budgets, and I think you see how conscientious they are, but the staff people that work with them to get the numbers right. It's hard. Trying to predict mandates and figure out where the state's going to go and what's going to happen in the environment, it's hard, and they do a great job at it. So understand that the organization devotes a lot to this process. And credit yourselves. I mean, I've been doing this for a long, long time. And I've been in a million budget meetings, and they get heated, and the knuckles get bared, and the words get harsh. And this group has figured out how to conduct serious business with civility and intellect. And it shows in the final product that you deliver. You do a great job with this, and you should be very proud of the way you approach it. And I think, to Jim's credit, his leadership in the budget committee shows in all this. I think he's mellowing with age a little bit.
Really, Joe?
I think.
This is mellow?
I think the ledge went deeper this year in looking at some specifics and really getting into the analysis of OTRs. So I do think this product that we've delivered is a good one that we should all feel good about. I missed giving Rick a pat on the back, too, throughout this process. He's there with numbers. being kind of a double check and a person who can critique what we've done. So a lot of credit to go around. I do really appreciate the effort that goes into this, and share your pride in the product that we deliver. So we'll be back in 3 months to talk about 2018.
Okay. I said a little while ago, we're the best county, and this is the perfect example of it. I think I can't agree anymore that we have a terrific budget process. Martha?
Yeah, just a pat on the back to Jim for, you know, I maybe it's the grandchildren. It's like,
could be.
You know, it's like, whatever, I'm happy. It's like, but it's you know, it's really very collegial and smooth this year. Thanks very much.
Very good. So let's move on, because we do have an executive session. We need to get through the rest of the reports. But before we do that, Carol, I wanted to bring your attention to Rule 7, subparagraph 8 of our rules on page 9, where it states, if a roll call shall be started on any motion or resolution, the roll call must be completed.
Well, how does that, well, maybe we can get a legal determination as to how that jives with
just
the motions and their
attention.
Precedents.
Thank
on
you.
Page 8.
Let's go to Workforce Development, Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, but I do have to say that I was a little taken aback with the action that just happened. You pointed out a rule in our book, and Carol was trying to point out a counter rule to ask for an opinion on that, and I think it she should have been recognized on that. It came across, frankly, as a little disrespectful, and I just want to point that out, because I'm hoping it wouldn't have been me. In the spirit of inclusion, WDIC has not met since our last legislature meeting and most likely will not meet this month, since our meeting is scheduled for the Wednesday before the Thursday Thanksgiving holiday. This always happens every year, and so we will try to figure out a time in earlier December to meet, because we'll have the same issue in December as well. So, but we have not met. I do want to take this opportunity, however, to get back to something a little earlier, and I appreciate the sentiment that we are a safe county, but I don't want us to overlook the fact that there are a lot of people in our county who feel unsafe. Now, that still exists, and not to negate the fact that we still have a lot of work to do to make everyone feel included, and that they can walk down the street or make complaints or go places and feel that they belong and that they are safe. So I just want to also point that out. Kudos to us for being the kind of county we are. We've been cutting edge. We've been demonstrating good ways to be good citizens to everyone. But we also have our issues that we need to work on.
Questions for Leslie? Let's go to the old library committee. We are having a meeting, and that will be this Friday, November 18th, at 12 o'clock right here. And we will have a presentation by our preferred developers that we designated as to what the status of the project is at this point, with the actions that have been taken by the city. Can I answer any questions? Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein.
I had a very meager report, but I've said it already.
Questions for Peter. Health and Human Services Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
The Health and Human Services Committee will meet on Monday the 21st. We don't have much on our agenda. We do need to continue our review of the Office of Human Rights, because After last meeting, there were some things we didn't get to, like the portion on source of income protection, which is something that the office has been involved with on a statewide level. So we need to continue that discussion, as well as return to some of the responses that we'd asked for from the office staff at the last meeting. So we will meet this Monday at 3:30 right here.
Questions? Then let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, David McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In addition, we met on the Monday the 7th. In addition to various resolutions on the consent agenda and other resolutions, which took up most of the evening, we had a presentation from Jeff Smith on the near completion of the Pine Tree Road pedestrian trail, along with many pictures and explanations of things that were lacking yet, and so on and so forth. It looks to have been a very nice project, although very expensive to get into, and I think it's going to be well used. So that's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Dave. Let's take the minutes of the previous meeting, November 1st. Yes, Rich.
Was there a resolution on establishing unit charges? Did we do that?
We already did that, yes.
Oh.
Sorry? Dave explained that there was no change in the from last year. So the minutes, is there a motion? Anna, seconded by Peter. Discussion? All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Is there any unfinished business? Let's have a motion to go into executive session to discuss a personnel matter about a particular individual. When we come out, we don't expect to take action. Can I get a motion? Dave McKenna, seconded by Peter. All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I think that's unanimous. We'll take a minute to shut down.